Let me say good evening and welcome everybody to a regular scheduled meeting of the City of Morro Bay Planning Commission, Tuesday, March 21st, 2023, in the Veterans Memorial Building. And we have a quorum up here this evening, and I'd like to call to order. I'm Chairperson Roshan, Bill Roshan, and our other commissioners are Mike Rodriguez, Vice Chair, Eric Meyer, Joe Ingrafia, and Asia King. And we're very happy that you're spending this rainy, windy night with us, so thank you. And we want to welcome everybody who's also on the Zoom call or on Channel 20. It's really great to have you. We have three items tonight, and so we've got a very full agenda. Our first item is going to be number three information session. Our second item is going to be our Planning Commission goals, and the third item is going to be a discussion on public benefits. So with all that to go, we're going to hop right into our business. Let me have a, if we could, we'd like to do a moment of silence, but what I'd love to say first is maybe we should think of all the people that have suffered from the rains and continue to suffer, you know, locally here tonight and tomorrow, and to thank our city staff. And our mayor is here tonight, and to thank our mayor for all the work that the city has done to help us through the storms. A moment of silence, please. Thank you all. If we could do the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So again, welcome everybody. We have a really nice, good-looking crowd tonight. Thank you. Any commissioner announcements? Asia?
Sure, I have a quick one. Happy spring, everyone. But also, as a planning commission and some of the maybe the planning staff, we're going to have an extracurricular activity we're going to be doing, nothing official, just for fun, reading a book called Architect, Verb. So Architect, Verb by an author named Rainier de Graaf. And so nothing formal, but if anyone wanted to read along with us, you're more than welcome. It's about building design, planning, local community stuff. So,
lovely. And please, if you're interested in this kind of stuff, the book could be fun, and we'd love to have you join us. The intention is we're going to pick a book a month and give it a try. With that, let me go right to public comment. This is an opportunity for anyone who wants to speak on something that's not on the agenda, or if you have to leave before we get to the agenda, we're happy to hear you speak now. And that includes anybody in the Zoom call as well. Do I have any takers? Oh, good, Bill. Welcome.
Which is kind of one of my passions, but last Sunday I read in the TT that as far as the offshore wind, they mentioned a height of 1,100 feet. And, you know, originally I heard the windmills, you know, the wind machines were going to be 600-700 feet, which is taller than the rock, in the article. And I just was wondering if there was any validity to it as far as if they've all sudden supersized it to 1,100 foot tall, because this was in the, like I say, a reporter mentioned the 1,100 foot height, which was kind of shocking. And then that kind of brought me back to Measure D, because I know the northern end of the Embarcadero, they're looking at a support. for the offshore wind for, you know, industrial boats and all that. And Joe Giannini, back in the early 60s, passed Measure D. He was kind of instrumental to save that and dedicate it for the fishermen because he saw the tourist industry coming into the Embarcadero. So from Beach Street North, an ordinance was passed called Measure D that said that should be restricted strictly to fishing and fishing-related. And that seems like it would be in conflict with what may be proposed for industry offshore support for these windmills. And so I just thought I'd kind of bring that up. But my main question was if anyone had heard if it's valid that the windmills are actually could be as tall as 1,100 feet.
Let's ask Scott. Do you have any info on that?
I mean, we're so early in the process right now. They haven't designed the wind farm yet. You know, they're still the leases out there are provisional right now. They haven't even been actually officially granted to the individual winners of the provisional lease process. So we're early in the process. You know, we're essentially looking at actually attending the wind energy conference in Sacramento. I was actually looking at reservations and stuff for hotels today.
When is that?
May 8th through the 10th.
It's a great question, Bill. So we'll keep it in mind and find out.
I would, if you don't mind, I would also mention that we are aware of the Measure D issue, and we have been conveying that to the wind folks as they come forward.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Carla, welcome.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you. Just real briefly, April 5th, Wednesday, the Vets Hall will be our goal setting session. That's up on the website, and want to encourage everyone, 5:30, to be here to participate. And please feel free to answer the surveys that are up on the city website right now. There's questionnaires. You can participate through that, and we look forward to everyone engaging. And also, I wanted to offer I'm going to hold office hours on Thursday, March the 30th. I will put it up on my Facebook page from 10 to 12. I'd like to invite any of you who would like to come and share anything in the community you have you want to talk about. And I am also available that time or any time to share all the information I have from our trip to Washington, D.C., in which we met with BOEM, the offshore wind regulators.
Wow,
twice.
Yeah.
So hopefully I can help answer some of those questions for you. Thank you.
That's exciting. Thank you so much.
I'm buying coffee. Yeah, my office is here, so no. 213 Beach Street. Come by and have coffee with me. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla, for the offer, the invite. Nate, do we have anybody in the queue?
There are no raised hands at this time.
Then let's go to our next item, the consent calendar. Are there any comments regarding the current and advanced planning process list? We don't need a vote if there's no comments. Let's keep going.
Mr. Chair, were you going to take
comment
on that item?
Say again?
Were you going to take public comment on the consent item?
I could.
Thank you.
But, all right, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that in reviewing the consent process, I noticed that the item most recently heard by your Commission on Appeal was the Laurel Street House that ended up with quite a protracted discussion with the referral back to staff. If you look at on the sheet that's suggested for receive and file, basically the discussion centers around the fact that now both parties are appealing this item to the City Council. I think it would be appropriate for this Commission, since staff apparently was unable to work out the discrepancies between the two parties, to reinforce whatever your position on that item was, because it was basically the appeal was denied conditionally on staff being able to work it out with the applicant and the appellant. That apparently did not happen, although I would love to hear what did happen, if anything.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that comment.
Thank you.
Let's move on. And where we are, new business. We're going to start with our information session. And I want to welcome, we have three guests tonight. And if I could invite the three of you to come sit up there next to Scott. Nancy Bast, thank you so much for being here, Nancy. Jeff O'Dell, we're thrilled. And Marlene Owens. If you'd come up and we'll share microphones there and... What? Go ahead and get it. We can meet everyone, and the way we're going to start this one, this is our third session, and we've had really nice response from everybody about this, and these sessions are very informal. They're about trying to tell history and to give the commission, our staff, and to offer that, to hear from the public about these really valuable pieces of history that we have here that really do define our town. And we've invited one of the commissioners each week to do the introduction, and this week is going to be Commissioner Agrafia, and he's actually been willing to give us a sort of a synopsis of where we are so far, which will help our guests sort of know what we're doing. And so, Joe, you have the floor.
I'm afraid I'm going to depart from my usual impromptu remarks because there's so many people to mention and so many details to give, so you'll forgive me, but I'm going to read some prepared remarks. The Morro Bay Planning Commission over the last several months has initiated a series of panel discussions about the historical developments of the city as part of its biweekly meetings. The commission wishes to explicitly thank the participants of these discussions for their generous commitments of time and effort. The presentations have been informal, engaging, informative, and always eclectic, as befits the culture of Morro Bay. The feedback from the home audiences viewing these meetings has been encouraging. It goes well beyond the appreciation for a good historical yarn. The narratives remind the citizens of Morro Bay every day of their good fortune to live in a place of such charming, small town culture, natural beauty, and community involvement. For readers who have missed any one or more of the presentations, we include here a recap of the various topics and a reminder that the video recordings are available online. So let me begin. Joe Dunlap and Roger Castle, both noted local historians and published authors, spoke about Morro Bay in the early days of World War II. The urgent war preparations occurring seemingly overnight transformed sleepy Morro Bay. Soon there would be a causeway connecting the shore of Morro Bay Spit in order to train for impending Pacific Island beach assaults, an expansive naval base, and a long course of seawall that was the first step in the evolution of the Embarcadero. Dorothy Cutter, a very longtime resident and respected artist and formidable community activist, regaled with stories of Morro Bay's art community and the emergence of Morro Bay as a unique and independently minded little city. Michael Woody spoke with impact of his Native American ancestry and the millennia of Native American settlement in Morro Bay. He explained how in less enlightened times the power plant construction was built over former Native American settlements. The results were often the dismissal of Native American property rights, historical artifacts and human remains disturbed and inadequately preserved, and land ownership never restored. Gail Queen, another longtime resident and real estate professional, spoke of her idyllic youth in Morro Bay. She also spoke of how development over the course of decades had replaced commercial landmarks of the past with newer buildings, which in turn became the landmarks of the present. Tonight's panel showcases memories of Nancy Bast, Jeff O'Dell, and Marlene Owen. Nancy remembers Morro Bay with a large and thriving fishing community, but not just as a resident observer. Nancy was an active commercial fisherwoman for 15 years, spending months away from home and traveling the length of the coast from the Mexican border to the shores of Alaska. Jeff O'Dell is a longtime resident, was a harbor commissioner and a council member in the 1980s. As Jeff recounts, he found himself pushed towards public service not by ambition, but rather by a pressing need to instigate more transparency and more participation in the way of politics and the way politics and development was conducted in Morro Bay. And in that effort, he was largely successful, and for that we're very grateful. This evening I was introduced to Marlene Owen, and she is another longtime resident and raised her family here and is a local business owner. Commissioner King spoke of her multi-generational roots on the Central Coast and how the many decisions of her ancestors helped shape the good fortune that she and her family enjoys today. She was equally forthright that with good fortune must also come responsibility to ensure that the opportunities are equitably distributed. Commissioner Meyer spoke with detail about the freedoms and delights of childhood spent growing up in Moore Bay. He reminded the listeners that while much of the past can no longer be replicated, there is still much that remains, and for that we should be grateful and very cautious. As for me, I count myself as a recent Moore Bay neighbor from the year 2012, but I'm no stranger to Moore Bay, having come here since in my preteen years, and I can remember you could ride a bike down farm lanes and go hunting for clams with pitchforks. And I'm a reader of history, and so it didn't take much for me to participate in these panels. Our panel exercise now draws to a conclusion over the next few weeks, and one could properly ask, what are we trying to accomplish by these exercises beyond entertainment? And I will close with a very simple response. Newcomers to our community immediately value what they see today in Moore Bay, but Moore Bay is, of course, a product of its past. We hope that we have planted an appreciation for that past and public support to consider how best to preserve the artifacts of that past, mindful that examining the past provides us with truth about how best to shape the future that we all want. An unexamined past leaves as our guide only the much less certain noises of the present. Thank you.
I'm inspired. Thank you, Joe. I also, one panelist is here tonight, too, that we didn't mention, Bill Martoni.
I'm sorry.
So, Bill, thank you.
I really apologize. and it's entirely my fault, but I do apologize for that, Bill. You know how much I think of you.
It's great to have you here. So let's get into it. And it's so much fun to talk to you folks, and you know so much. Can we start with you, Jeff? Can you give us a little, kind of add on to what Joe said about you, kind of give us a little bit of your focus, and you've touched so many pieces of Moro Bay. Do you want to highlight three for us that you would like to talk about? Your background, yeah.
Okay, my background?
Yes, please.
Well, I moved here in 70. I worked in the tourist industry for 3 years. I worked at what was called the Golden Tee then. It's now called.
It's best if you can to speak right into
the Inn at Moro Bay is what it's called now. Big experience then was the 1973 oil embargo, which shut this town down, much like the lockdown for the pandemic. I mean, everything just went. People lost their jobs or anything. That was an eye opener as far as the travel aspect of tourism. When the price of gas went up a dollar, nobody came. So after that, I attended Cuesta College. I attended art school in Kansas City. And then I moved back to Moro Bay to raise my family and work. I got a job helping run a boatyard for several years, a boatyard that Bill over there is very familiar with. And then as a result of working in the boatyard, I got a job as a commissioned boat builder for 3 years, which I built the boat and got me involved in the harbor, both as a boat. When I worked at the boatyard, I knew everybody on the Embarcadero, and we had a very vibrant fishing fleet then. We still even had divers that would go down to the Channel Islands and dive, so we hauled their boats out. And I think that experience both bonded me to the bay and taught me about its fragility. And then as a painter, I had the most wonderful subject matter in the world, so I spent lots of hours. If I wasn't working on the bay on a boat, then I was painting. Out of that, issues just kept coming up and proposals kept coming before the city that were just out of this world as far as what they wanted to do. And I think I became very protective of the bay and was offered there was an opening on the Morro Bay Harbor Commission, which existed from 1983 to 1987.
There actually was a Harbor Commission.
It was based very much like this commission. There was a stipend paid to the members, and they had public oversight over the Tidelands leases in Morro Bay for the first time in the city's history. They became a very hated among some of the older lease site holders because they never had to be accountable for anything. During that period of time, the city conducted its first audit of the lease sites, the financials, and they also conducted the first code inspection of the entire Embarcadero for the first time in city history, and found a lot of problems and caused a lot of problems in a way, because whenever you want to remediate a situation that somebody's making a lot of money at, they tend to push back. And so it was a contentious situation. In 86, I was very concerned, partially because of a person who chose to run for office, who I had a lot of dealings with, and just my feelings about where the bay was headed and where things were headed in Morro Bay. So I ran for office and unfortunately won, and spent 4 years up there. And actually, when we first started, we were in the old community center. I think it's called the rec hall, and it was.
So you were on city council how many years?
4 years.
4 years.
From 1986 to 1990. And our council made the transition from the old rec hall, which was torn down to make room for the parking lot for the community center, which we built. And we remodeled this building and moved the meetings over to here. Very contentious. I don't know. I think we've talked about this before. It just seems like Morro Bay has always been at war, one way or another. In the 86 election was when there was an issue called the Williams Brothers Shopping Center. And the Williams property is where part of that is where the waste treatment plant is now. But they had proposed at the end, if you keep going straight off of Morro Bay Boulevard when you're up by the freeway, that's the Domaghini Ranch, if you just keep going up that ranch road. And they proposed the shopping center, put it on the ballot. The initiative won, and for 4 years I was haunted by that very contentious issue. And it ended up in many lawsuits and things. And I don't know. It's a long story, but it ended up not getting built. And also, we had a person who was on the council when I was on the council who was against it. And then when she became mayor, she reversed her position. And they approved, and there had been an initiative that had passed that had limited the size of the project. That was the second initiative over this issue. And the mayor had approved a project that was bigger than that. There was a lawsuit, and the city lost.
Yeah.
And then several months later, that incumbent mayor only got like 300 votes.
So what I really enjoyed when Joe and I were meeting with you and talking to you is that you sort of surfaced how much activism is part of the history of Morro Bay.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, well, and especially in the old rec hall, it was maybe about half of the square footage of this building. We were all on the same level. We had tables like this with curtains in front and the speakers, and everybody was about 5 feet away from. We could get spit on if they were mad enough.
We've heard from several that we should actually get out from behind the desks and sit on tables down there, which I like that idea. I do.
Yeah, and I don't know. Everything was fought. We also had the Cloisters development project that came before us. They had taken 80-year-old paper lots and proposed that as a proposal. They were going to build 50-foot lots right down to mean high water on the beach. And so we fought our way through. I think it ended up being four lawsuits. How we resolved it was a unique situation. We created a Blue Ribbon Committee. We went out of our way to invite all the stakeholders, all the people that had an opinion, to come and sit in the same room for several months and say, okay, what are we going to do? And that's how the Cloisters was designed by the community.
I'm going to share the floor next with Nancy, and we'll come back to some of those stories. Nancy, would you sort of in your words kind of tell us what you've been up to in Morro Bay?
You're smarter than I am. I just watched him. My name is Nancy Bast. I'm a homeowner, have been since I moved here in 1978. We stopped here after the fishing season. I was fishing then on a boat called the Shillelagh. And if you don't know what Shillelagh...
When you talk, it's best if you could. Yeah, right into the microphone.
Sorry.
Thank you.
The boat that I fished on was called the Shillelagh, and if you're not familiar with it, all you have to do is look at the current Morro Bay city logo, and you'll see a green boat, and it is a depiction of the Shillelagh that I fished on. The word Shillelagh he chose because he was Irish. His name was Sullivan. And it means a walking stick or a cane, which he thought was appropriate for his boat. It also could be a cudgel. And one time we were getting the boat ready for going for the albacore season, which is all we fished for. And we usually left here around July 4th to go north, north to Canada usually. And but while we were getting the boat ready, there was he must have been a farmer from the valley because he's big and he had bib overalls on, and he studied what we were doing on deck for a while, and finally he said, "I know why you named that boat," and I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because it beats you to death." He was a smart guy. And let's see. I first started fishing in 1971. I had worked for the gas company in Southern California for 13 years. But the company I worked for, Southern County's Gas Company, did all the billing for Ventura County and San Luis Obispo County. And so I was very familiar with the names in Morro Bay long before I ever saw it. I was in the billing department there. But when I fell in love with a fisherman, I went fishing on my six-week vacation, but we weren't full of fish, so we didn't come back when I was supposed to. Because he never left the grounds unless the boat was full. And so when I got back, I was fired. We had just been merged into the bigger company, Southern California Gas Company, and they didn't have the heart that my little company did. So I became a fisherman for the next 15 years. My last trip was... A season was in 1985, and there were incredible changes during that time. It was really a very camaraderie fishery for many, many years, until probably 1990 or so, when the fishing on the Pacific Coast got sort of low, and so people started going to the South Seas. And one boat that I did bring some pictures. I hope maybe some of them.
If you just hold it up and face the camera over there, maybe they can get a good picture of it.
Okay. I'll try here. This is a bunch of fishermen. I always liked fishermen because they were real independent. They were self-motivated and practical. They also could fix most anything. And but they were characters, and somehow I fit in. These people, there's a couple of pictures even of me here. And one, it's not all work. I'm laying there sleeping on the salt that goes into the hole along with my dog. And another one, I'm holding up a bird that landed on the boat. We were usually fishing over 200 miles out, and our best fishing was up in Canada, off of the Pacific, on the outside coast of Vancouver Island and Queen Charlotte Islands. But in 1973, there was a law that was passed called the 200-mile economic zone. It went into effect in March of 1977, and it really shook up the entire albacore fleet because we got most of our fish off of Canada. So we snuck up there, and everybody was real nervous looking for gunboats, Canadian gunboats, and one did come out, and it got, the radio was the fisherman's communication. And so everybody went north to get out of Canada to go to Alaska, as did we. And we actually anchored up on a remote island in southeast Alaska for a little time on shore. He was very adventurous, and one year he changed the registration on the boat from a commercial boat to a yacht, and we went down the coast and into Baja California, the Gulf of Mexico. When we were coming back, it's always harder to come back. To go north, it's always harder. And there was a yacht that had been in the Acapulco race that had broken the seams on the deck and was getting water in it. And they had left it in with a young couple that didn't know anything about boating, but they were on it. And we towed that boat. It was belonged to a very wealthy Santa Barbara man. And we towed it to San Diego in very rough weather. And he didn't pay us. We had to take him to court to pay us. But he re-registered it, and we went fishing that year, as usual.
Well, let me ask you one question. When you were talking with Joe and I, you said how Morro Bay was the center of the fishing world in those years.
Indeed.
Could you tell us a little bit about that before we go to Marlene?
Yeah. Yeah. It was. At the end of the season, all the school fish went back to the west, but the bigger fish, by school fish I mean 12 to 15 pounds, bigger fish were 25 to 30 pounds, and they were really fun. You felt like you were really fishing, but at the end of the season, the school fish went west, and the big fish hung around Morro Bay. So the whole fleet, well, maybe not the whole fleet, but most of the fleet, because the fleet came from everywhere on the Pacific coast. They came from San Diego, Newport, Morro Bay, Ventura, Santa Barbara, Seattle, Astoria, everywhere. And so those boats, they'd had their season in. We had our season in. We were ready to celebrate. And so we came to Morro Bay because Morro Bay still had some big fish. And when those went, we came into Morro Bay, and the boats were tied 8 deep, 8, 10
wow.
deep. And in the
current, you said you never had any fun.
It was a pretty fun time in Morro Bay those days. It's too bad it stopped.
Well, thank you.
Yes, so, happy Jacks.
So, Marlene, thank you so much for you came at the last minute to be with us. Thank you so very much.
I really did, and I was not aware that I should be this well prepared, but I couldn't have stayed up all night anyway. But I bet
we've heard you have lots of good stories. So,
well, I have.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Kind of stories you wanted, but I moved here. My name is Marlene, and I Owens, and I moved here because my parents had moved here from Nebraska and bought the dry cleaners. And it was at that time across the street from where it is now, the Village Center, and it was in one of those little buildings that had been opened up into all kinds of things. And the building that we are in now was the candle shop. Maybe you remember the candle shop. Anyway, we moved here in 1970. My husband was an aerospace engineer and had worked in all kinds of things, and it was... Well, with aerospace, what goes up must come down, and so you have cancellations of things. So we came to Morro Bay because he was going to be without a job shortly and opened something called Owens TV. I had been a teacher in Maine and Montana and Nebraska along our travels throughout the country, and, of course, my interest was education. So I started researching schools. The school in Morro Bay, which it's quick because there was a elementary school in Morro Bay, and they had built a high school and they had built the junior high, and it was all in the same property over there where it is now, and there was no junior high in Las Osas at that time. Anyway. We looked and checked all this out, and it was all very nice. And the high school, the elementary school was nice. There was a guy called Sam Canale who was principal. Maybe some of you remember him. And followed by Mr. Lacey. You shaking your head, you were here.
Oh, yeah. I was.
You knew these people, huh? Anyway.
I've been to his office.
Yeah. Most people had.
So have my kids.
A lot of people had. And you remember the school secretary who was really ran the schools. I don't know what the principals did, but that was, name just went right out. Mary Nagano.
Yeah.
Mary Nagano. And anyway, but the school, Morro Bay School District, was small and well-supported and well-funded by PG&E. And the smokestacks, and for whatever else they were and weren't, they did keep the coffers of the school district full. And this made us rather attractive. And so there came a day in which they decided it would be nice if all the schools, and at Baywood Elementary was having a hard time, was going broke. And there was a lot of things like that. And so they decided to do a county-wide vote to make it all one San Luis Coastal Unified District. And Morro Bay was not really in favor of that, as I understand it. This is history, because I didn't move here till 70. But it was history, and so it was a county vote because Morro Bay was not incorporated, so it passed because there are those that are much larger than Morro Bay, and they like to, well, the stories, you know, the politics of the day came into play in my mind, and Morro Bay decided it ain't going to happen anymore. We're going to get ourselves organized and become City Morro Bay, and no one can take anything of ours, and we will make our own decisions. Thank you very much. And I guess it was kind of contentious, but at any rate, Morro Bay became a city shortly thereafter, and the school district was very much a catalyst in that sort of thing, as I understand it. I wasn't here until 1970. And my kids started my two older kids, child children, started school here. You probably know David, at least. He runs the dry cleaners. My dad owned the dry cleaners in Morro Bay. I bought it from him and ran it for 25 years. And now David is running it. He's putting in his hitch. And his son is thinking he might like to buy it. So maybe we'll get four generations in there. We'll see how that all works out. And we have gone through a tremendous amount of changes in there, too. But the school district was such that there was no high school. When David, my son, was in second grade, I was asked to be on a commission that's a group that said that decided where we would build a junior high. And there was property room on the school, at the high school, that they could have built one there, but we decided that it would be fair because in the consolidation of the school district, they would have become part of the unified school district too. And they were coming over here to high school, which farther back when some of you may remember, I don't know, but if you wanted to go to high school, you went to San Luis Obispo because there was no high school here. But at any rate, they put the high school in order that we had to decide whether we were going to do a junior high in Morro Bay, Los Osos, where they had the property and where that eventually get built. And they would have to bus the kids from Los Osos to Morro Bay. So we in our group decided that it would be only fair to bus the kids from Morro Bay to Los Osos to junior high. So that's how the junior high got settled where it was a group of people decided that. And by the way, they were mostly Los Osos and Morro Bay people on that commission. It wasn't decided by San Luis Obispo. At any rate, it went on like this, and eventually I was served on the Personnel Commission. I don't know if you guys know what the Personnel Commission is, but you know what the school board is. It handles certified people. The Personnel Commission handles classified people. And I served on that until they decided that maybe they'd like to unionize, and I decided it was time for me to go find someplace else to work. It wasn't much of a job anyway. It was like you're doing, not too well paid. At least I assume you're not too well paid. You live in Morro Bay.
just Eric's well paid.
That's what I thought. Well, we did get a little stipend, but that I served on there until they decided things were going haywire. Things were going haywire in the school a little bit. Discipline had gone down tubes, and they were blaming the parents, and the parents were blaming the teachers, and that's education in general, and if you think about it. But they decided to call together a whole bunch of people, that parents, to come in and work one in every classroom. Well, I had been a teacher for years, and I kind of was toying with the idea of going back to school and refreshing my education so I could do this. So I went and worked in the school for about 6 years. Maybe some of you remember the name Mary Lou Erickson. I worked in her fifth grade classroom and so on. But I've served on a lot of committees with the school. And that school, I also was one of the first female Little League coaches in Morro Bay. that was a fun thing. And I love ball, baseball, and I love softball, and played a lot of it. But there's a lot of people who did not want a woman, their kid, to have a woman coach in Little League either. that was a real no-no, but I could stand up to them. I knew I had played on a state softball team in Nebraska when I was young. So it was not that I didn't know how. I did, and still do. I played my last game of softball in this town when I was 65, which was a long time ago. Anyway, maybe some of you remember, but in Little League, it was at the school, or elementary. We had Little League teams. I think we had four Major League teams, which are the older kids, and I think we had four Minor League teams.
And the ball field was right there?
Right there in the playground. Most of it happened on the playground right there. There still is a backstop in one corner of it. But then the city formed a the thing that they've got. I can't say a word, sorry. But at any rate, they took over Little League, and it was no longer Little League, and it was city leagues and this kind of thing. And now they're coming back to Little League, I saw, because I met the people who were coaching. So at any rate, it's coming full circle again, too. But there were many things that happened at that school, and it was, you know, they had a parent in every classroom who was teacher's aide, and it worked very well. It really did. And Sam Canelli had gone on to become county superintendent, and Mike Lacey, I think his first name was Mike, Lacey became principal, and so on and so forth. And so it just, but if you remember the teachers, do you want to know things like that? I sat down and researched teachers who had been here for a long, long time. Sandra Maciel was ESL teacher. Maybe you remember Sandra. You certainly must remember her husband, who had the refrigeration repair shop down in the Embarcadero. And Marlene Peter, whose son now owns a galley restaurant.
Right.
Several other names coming.
So,
Joan Peterson, who is long time. I think she's still here.
So,
she's still right here and doing well.
At least. Huh? So Marlene.
Library volunteer, there you go.
This is perfect, because one of the things that we're interested in as a planning commission is the elementary school. And, you know, right now it's in transition. It's no longer a school. So your focus on that was really helpful. I'm wondering, Jeff, do you have any sort of background in the school that you would want to speak to?
Well, my sons went to it, attended Morrow Elementary. It's interesting that for a short period of time, Del Mar was closed, and Morrow Elementary was the only elementary school in Morrow Bay. And then at some point, they reversed it, and then, of course, they did away with the school facility. I just remember I really loved the old school building. That's just an emotional response, but I just thought it was so nice. It's a very old building. It smells like old wooden floors and blackboards.
It's a piece of architecture.
It is, and I think it's a community center. And the thing that does disturb me, in one sense, about the I know there was a proposal for housing, actually very dense housing, is that is the only free and open turf in the city of Morrow Bay.
Yeah.
There's no other place to go do things like kick a soccer ball you can go to the parks, and they don't want you to do it there. And the other alternative would be Lila Kaiser. So I hope that some of that green space gets retained. It's just a beautiful overlook from the community center and seeing the school back there in the rock. And
It's lovely to hear. And we're also, really interested in the Embarcadero, of course, which you have a lot of experience with in the Bay. What would you talk about historically about the Embarcadero?
A lot of it's gone. I don't know. I think in one sense it's interesting that it still remains somewhat intact. It's been refurbished and upgraded and kind of a little less funky. We used to have a saying here, you can't take the funky out of Morrow Bay.
We still say that.
Yeah. But, practicality as far as building materials and so on and so forth, as the Bay has redeveloped, it's lost that creosote piling mystique that we associate with old waterfronts. I think that we're at a point where it would... I've always thought that they should bring back the Harbor Commission to provide direct public oversight over those lease sites. I know that there's one transfer that took place in the 90s after the Harbor Commission had been taken away that led to litigation just not very many years ago when that site was transferred again, was sold. And it was because the council just refused to look at the engineering deficits on that site, which were potential liability for the city. A lot of people don't understand that everything west on the Embarcadero is Titan's leases, with two small exceptions. And we're liable for anything that happens there. We had a huge fire at the South Tee Pier while I was on the city council, and we got sued big time over that. If there's a trip and fall incident because the leaseholder hadn't kept up their stairwell, we get sued. And that was the whole impetus for the Harbor Commission in the first place. And unfortunately, you want to trust the people that are elected and sitting up in those big seats. Unfortunately, a lot of them don't know anything about Tidelands leases. And during, as part of the introduction, when you went on to the Harbor Commission, you spent a day of orientation learning about the Tidelands Act and about those leases and the reason why they have the conditions that they do. And that's what scares me, is I think that there's people that aren't aware of the situation down there legally and financially, and that those people, all the lease sites down there, every person that signs the lease to take over the lease site is responsible for everything there, including the revetment, according to the requirements of the Tidelands Act.
And this is still very much part of our reality. We get cases all the time, of course.
Well, and you will. That's just the nature of the beast. And of course, water-dependent uses, which is what the Tidelands Act actually prescribes for those uses, are not as profit-making as a bar or a restaurant or, anything like that. So there's always been a competition for these waterside sites. We'd like to build a cocktail lounge there and make lots of money. And another guy says, I'd like to offload fishing boats and pack the ice up the boats.
Right.
And we dealt with a lot of those situations.
Your long-time perspective really shines through as you talk, that you do know what you're talking about. So, Nancy, if you were to talk about the history of the waterfront, of the harbor, of the Embarcadero, what could you focus the Planning Commission on?
Well, let's see. I was on the Harbor Commission with Jeff. It was quite a coup to be a harbor commissioner because in 1982, Gene Shelton was reelected as mayor, and he had a wonderful council of Bruce Risley and three other people, and they were altruistic enough to create the Harbor Commission. And we were on it for 4 years until the next mayor was elected, and his buddies got him to fire us the first thing he did when he was had the gavel. And I want to talk about Jeff's painting
sure.
a little bit. I'm killing two birds with one stone because it's my laundromat that I had for 20 years after I quit fishing. And Jeff immortalized it, as he does with so many of Morro Bay's past wonderful places, the Rod Cabin Hotel. I don't know. Everybody must know that, because that was Morro Bay's fame, really, that Log Cabin Hotel on the Bluff. That became the Blue Sail Inn. But Jeff painted that, and he painted several other historical landmarks that are no longer here. Gail talked about in your last meeting about the Red House on the Bluff, and Jeff immortalized that as well as the vacant ice plant block that now has condos, Bayshore Bluffs condos. And he immortalized many things. He's never been good at selling his own paintings, so people haven't seen him. And I think that his house is a gallery of Morro Bay's yesterdays, and it's just wonderful. I also want to talk about the library, the old library.
Yeah, please. And before you start, I was going to ask if Carla could, in a couple of minutes, come up and if you had any questions for our guests, if you'd be so kind as to help focus the discussion, if you would. Sorry to interrupt, Nancy.
That's okay.
Thank you.
It doesn't say.
So, Jeff, how many paintings do you have?
I beg your pardon?
How many paintings do you have?
Oh, God, I don't know. I don't.
Like 10?
I don't know.
You did one at the Circle Inn, as I recall.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've done a lot downtown. I haven't done that in a while, but yeah. I just sold the one that's of the ice plant, and they're no longer in the state, so I don't have that. But I do so. I'm in a gallery.
I'm thrilled. Probably,
so
yeah,
you know, you can come and see my artwork if you want at a gallery, which I'll.
I think we're all going to go over after we're done tonight. Is that okay?
Yeah, they're closed.
Oh, yeah, please. Marlene, go ahead.
I have a thing that you might put down into your historical facts.
Yeah, please.
And that's that the school, Morro Elementary, was designed and built back in the 30s. And it was here when this was an Army base. It was here. It was there, and those kids walked those halls, too. That place is historical. You can't walk into it without getting shivers.
So the buildings that are there now were all...
Well, not all of them, because they built the long line buildings.
Right.
But the original building itself was built it was designed. I looked up it online. It was designed in the 30s, the mid-30s, and it was built in the late 30s. Anyway, it's Morro Bay history. Everybody, I heard somebody talking about Joe Giannini. Joe Giannini was here when that building was built. He walked in I don't know if he went to school there because he lived out in the country, I believe, but I'm sure that the kids went there. I mean, I could go through town and tell you people who went to school in that place, and they're your old people. I mean, they're my age and older. So you're talking history, and you're talking Morro Bay. This is Morro Bay and old Morro Bay. And if you want to see old Morro Bay, you look at that school. One of the main churches in town was the corner on the block where Rogers Gallery is. That was one of the old churches in this town. There's just all kinds of things that are very, very old. They should not be disturbed. They should be stayed right where they are. And nobody should talk you into that. If that's something, because I listened to them talking about building the tiny houses, which I think it's a wonderful thing, but not there. Okay?
Thank you. I'm listening hard.
There, I'm glad you're listening, because we lost the school district. Bill Newman was the superintendent of schools when we came, and he was there, and some of you remember him. He's a big man on saving the bay, because the bay is worth saving. So is Morro Elementary.
You know, we really need good people to negotiate with the school district, and I think we just found our three.
One needs to negotiate with the school district on a number of things. One of them is equal representation. We do not have equal representation. That's why Morro Elementary got closed instead of a school that was underfunded and underdone in San Luis Obispo. That's why Sunnyside got done. When they took over Morro School, there was a big amount of money in the bank. They took it, and they may build Laguna Junior High. Now, I really think that it's time that Morro Bay says not only no, but hell no.
I'm listening hard. Yeah. So, Nancy, could you wrap up? You were going to talk about the library.
Oh.
Thank you.
There it is. The old library was on Morro Bay Boulevard by, what was that, Monterey.
It's still there.
It is still there, but it's not a library, unfortunately.
It's across the parking lot from Buttercup Bakery.
That's it. That's where I went for years when I came here. And then the town wanted a bigger library because it was real small. And we started a fundraiser, and we had, Jane and Don Bailey who got the ball rolling. Don had been a professor, retired, and Jane was the first homecoming queen of Cal Poly. And they put up a thermometer kind of thing on the property where the library is now, with the goal of reaching a certain amount of money, and I can't remember what it was, but they were always upping it because people were contributing to this wonderful new library. And it was a real success story, and the people of Morro Bay and their supporters built that library.
I love it. Carla, any chance we can talk you into coming up and either ask our guests some questions or tell them how great they are, something like that?
Well, they are great. I'm just kind of reminiscing in all this past. You know, I moved here in 1978 also. My husband is fourth generation, and, you know, a lot of you all know him and his family. His dad was the first vet here. So listening to these, I remember the shillelagh. I remember that boat because I used to be down on the waterfront. And when the boatyard was down there and all the plans for how that was going to be, the library, I think, was Jude Long there when it was on the corner? I think she was. So Jude Long was a librarian. Before her was, so I remember those. And the hardware store, Double D's hardware store, Vivian Double D had that up there on the boulevard. I think when I moved here, it was all the boulevard that is mostly real estate offices and thrift shops, antique shops. It was
paint
all gas stations and banks. And what?
There were three paint stores on Morro Bay.
Three paint stores, right. Vivian's and the other,
And a Western Auto.
Right, Western Auto. And then all the banks, Security, Pacific, B of A. There was gas stations on every corner just about. It was, it's changed a lot. And the Golden Tee, the Kleinhammers had that. And they had the Anchorage, Mr. T's, which is where, or Mr. K's.
Mr. K's.
Anchorage, where the... in the shoe store, but where the surf shop is now. Right down there. So, maybe you could fill in some of the gaps. You talked about all the changes on the Embarcadero. So maybe you could fill in some of those gaps of what some of those were. I remember going to the candle store when I was a little kid. We came up and camped here.
Still smells that way once in a while.
Yeah, I remember it well because we'd come up from Solvang and stay at the campground. So, I think it'd be great if you could fill in. You were talking, Jeff, about some of those places on the Embarcadero that are gone.
One of the places that always intrigued me, there was an abalone farm on the Embarcadero in the late 70s, early 80s, which was quite remarkable. They had quite an operation going, and they grew abalone right in Morro Bay. There were two boatyards. When I worked, I actually worked in the boatyard at the south end. It's still in operation. It was the Myers lease, if anybody's familiar with that. And, but there was also a boatyard which was on the Embarcadero where the set of stores called the boatyard is. And that was controversial when we were on the Harbor Commission because the person who owned that lease and owned the boatyard would not pull fishermen's boats. They were all having to go to Avila or further south to get their boats, and they could pull up to a 50-foot boat at that boatyard, and they refused to do it. I think it was an issue of dredging, and the owner was too cheap to dredge underneath the lift, and so they just didn't do it. I had believed for 5 years, actually, and while all the time I was in the council, that particular lease site was not performing up to the requirements of the lease because they all have performance clause, and I thought that they were in default, And I thought it was sad because the city of Morro Bay lost thousands of dollars because we couldn't haul a 50-foot boat here.
Yeah.
And they all ended up down Avila. There was a lot of small shops, and most Embarcadero lease sites then only had one business on them. Then there were, you know, just a lot of little funky little places, and it was a lot more casual. There were more boats. There were significantly more boats in this harbor in the 80s than there are now.
So we're getting close to the end of our hour, and I don't know if this is politically correct, but you three have charmed me to death. I'm convinced. Can you give us a couple of final words? Jeff, can we start with you? Just encouragements for our work here and the historic narrative in Morro Bay.
Just looking back, I think the most positive thing that the two councils that I worked on, regardless of all the personnel and everything, I think the smart thing that we always did was we went out of our way to involve the public and all the stakeholders in an issue that was controversial. We, you know, the general way that things get done is you just kind of keep it under wraps and then you spring it on everybody and hope it gets approved. And that generally works against a lot of things, and in Morro Bay especially 30 years ago. So I think that just to have public involvement and oversight, give them a piece of the, give them some skin in the game. Let them help own the development or own the project or own the issue and bring them in. Don't be afraid of the public.
That's really helpful.
You know, I think the fear of the public is a condition that exists in a lot of governmental situations.
Well, how can I be afraid of Marlene? Marlene, what are your last words?
I'm spooky. The thing that needs to happen is old Morro Bay needs to stand up and speak, and they have given up. Because they have been so trounced and so, oh, well, we don't care. We want to go. We need to come of age. Morro Bay needs to come of age, and it needs to become worldly, and we need everything that anybody else has. We've got more than anybody else has in our history. We do have. Where else will you find a World War II base, a school that was built in the 30s? Where else are you going to find an Embarcadero where people can look and say, I can remember fishing under that pier? Where else are you going to find that? Now let's take the pier out because somebody somewhere has got bigger and better piers. Come on, folks, get the old Morro Bay to speak out.
Thank you, Marlene. Nancy, you get the last word. And you're following Marlene and Jeff. This is going to be tough.
It has been fun, and I think what you're doing is quite wonderful. I wish it had been done earlier, but anyway, we have Jane Bailey and that other lady's books, and you can take over from there. There was a lot of activism that made Morro Bay. We had a bunch of groups that formed. First one was Citizens Action League that I was a part of. I know there was obviously other protest groups.
Morro Bay Tomorrow.
Yes.
That
was before me. There was Cal, and then there was Vic, and then there was ABC, and then there was another Cal, not the same name or group, but they've all been activists, and probably the one that did the most is the first one, the Citizens Action League, because we put through initiatives. We probably had 4 or 5 or 6 initiatives on the ballot because the leaders wouldn't do what we wanted them to do. And we still have that activism very definitely. And people need to know that there are those groups that are right now working, and they should find out who they are and join them.
You three make a great point. Morro Bay looks the way it does to a large extent because of that activism. Yeah.
So, commissioners, I apologize. The guests were way better than us, and so I had to let them talk. Can you each give us a sentence to thank our guests? Mike, can I start with you?
Yeah. I guess one of the things that I had as a prior planning commissioner that I don't have now is a tool or tools to save my history and to preserve my history here in Morro Bay. I had that in the other city I used to live in. We had a historical landmarks commission that would look at history and preserve it when possible. And, you know, you had to reach a high bar before you could do any of the things you talked about in letting things go or disappear. So we don't have that tool. I think that's one of the things we were looking for as a tool, as a planning commission to preserve our history. So thank you very much for helping us.
Thank you, Mike.
I'll just follow up with that. I think that the whole point of what we're doing here is to try to come up with a plan for Morro Bay and how we preserve our history and how we balance preservation with progress without killing one by the other.
Asia.
Well, I'm just inspired to become a painter and start painting architecture. But no, thank you guys for sharing. And it's really, I think in particular, great to hear about what used to be in different buildings mm-hmm. and how those same buildings are serving new purposes, but in their same or similar form. So it's a good pathway for how to preserve and progress. So thanks.
Joe, so full circle, you started us, you get to... Last word.
I think the three of you, in fact, all the speakers, are just living proof of how much we can learn from the past as to what we should be doing now to save and protect Morro Bay. And with respect to Marlene, I had to mention, you mentioned Sam Canale. On my mother's side, he turned out by far to be my favorite cousin and was actually responsible for introducing me to Morro Bay. So thank you personally from all of us.
We're going to take a 5-minute break, but a big thank you. Can we applaud our guests, please? Five-minute break, and we'll be back.
Good job. Good job, too. And I remember you.
it wasn't intentional to...
So, commissioners, I'm still inspired by our first session and our three guests, and it's going to get even better now because we get to hear from Scott present our goals for the coming year. And let me introduce... We're looking at D1 on the agenda... Planning Commission recommendations to City Council on goals for 23-24. Scott, I'd like to start with your report. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you, Chair Roshan. Let me see if I can get the screen up here. There we go. So this is going to be your second discussion on goals. The first one was a month ago. Today it was on February 21st. So two Planning Commission meetings ago. We'll be looking at the development of recommendations to the City Council for the short-term, for the goals and short-term action items for the FY23-24 goals process. The overall process included outreach through surveys on the city's website. You had Mayor Wixom mention that earlier in the meeting. There's going to be a follow-up meeting at the City Council on Wednesday, April 5th. It's a special meeting to discuss goals, which is why it's important that we get your input this evening so we can have that input for part of that discussion that the City Council will be having. And then the idea would be that we'll be wrapping up, the council will be wrapping up the goal-setting process towards the May time frame of this year. We have current city goals. There are five of them: improve public infrastructure, achieve economic and fiscal sustainability, address housing needs, climate action, and improve community health. Underneath each of these goals, there are several action items, many of which are action items that are under the sort of purview or responsibility of the Community Development Division. And we'll talk about more on that later. So we received input from the commission. I have six items that I kind of developed from the input that you provided at the last meeting. Not to say that I got it all right or that all the action items I put in here are right either. It's to start the discussion so we can sort of finalize what the Planning Commission recommendation is. So I don't think this is the end-all be-all. It's just what I was able to derive from my notes and to try to move this item forward. The first item was development of a historic preservation ordinance. Obviously, the Commission's already weighed in on this and wants to make that one of the recommendations. There's questions about where we might house it or whether we create a new goal, which might be community planning, and we could house the historic preservation under it, or we could come up with some other name for the goal that the Commission, you know, is in agreement on. And then I have four items underneath this for consideration by the Commission to include as action items. One would be to seek grants to assist in the ordinance creation. Investigate certification as a certified local government for historic preservation. Now, I will tell you, that comes out of your general plan. Your general plan, this is an implementation item out of that as it relates to historic preservation, because that is, again, in your general plan. Investigate establishment of a historic register. That is also derived from your general plan. And then investigate creation of a historic inventory, again, also talked about in the general plan. So those are while things that you might not have spoken about in the past, they are things that are in the city's general plan. And it's not to say that these are things that need to be in here now. It's just to start the discussion, and maybe you want to take a more metered approach. You're obviously aware that we have the Historic Society that provided us an ordinance to start from, and so maybe this is things that we do later on in the process or not, but I, again, wanted to put those in front of you for discussion. Two is development of a downtown design district to address the height increase in the downtown that's in our new zoning code. That was authorized, the development and formation of an ad hoc committee was authorized by City Council on February 14th. Potentially an area to locate this item would be, we could house it under fiscal sustainability and economic vitality, or under the new community planning goal, if we go with that. It's an option. And then we have three action items underneath it, and that would be to incorporate an incentive program, maybe related to housing or affordable housing or some other item that could accompany the height increase. So if you do X, you can get to the 37 feet or whatever that number ends up being, you know, that comes out of a recommendation from the ad hoc committee. Identify areas in the downtown where greater height makes sense, and maybe conversely, where it doesn't make sense. And I think part of the historic conversation could be, you know, involved in this. I think, you know, there's probably a lot to be said, and you heard about that this evening, about some of the historic nature of our buildings that are in our downtown, and maybe specific ones we might want to preserve, right? So I think that's part of the conversation as well. And then lastly, consider use of form-based design in policy development, so we understand what, if we do go to this three-story level in the downtown in certain locations, what it might look like. So those are three action items for consideration underneath this goal item. Oops, if I hit the forward on the, okay. So item three is related to the other item on your agenda this evening, and that is develop a community benefits policy. I'm not sure if you want to include this, because I do think we'll be done with this before the FY23-24 goals, you know, are implemented or start implementation, which would be starting July 1. That's when they would become effective. And I would imagine we'll probably be done with this by then, or pretty darn close.
I mean, it depending upon the next hearing, next session, this could be done for now.
I think so, yes. Yeah. I think in any way, by the time we get to when we start those other goals, we'll probably be done with this in some shape or form. Four, so there was a discussion about having the Planning Commission be more instrumental in the Vistra Property Master Plan. This could include a new goal under community planning as well. That could also be under economic and development and fiscal sustainability. So there's options where you might want to house that. So I provided those options. You should weigh in on that. I also added three action items underneath it, and that's to increase project awareness by having PC be the bridge to the community. I think that might have been a recommendation by the chair. Have PC engaged in all aspects of the master plan, and I think that's not bad. We could have presentations by the consultant to the, as an update of where we stand, where we're at, those types of things, and like even product presentations to the Planning Commission could be something that we look at. But this does need to be a little bit maybe more fleshed out if there's more specifics that you want, so I pointed that out in item B. And then, again, I just mentioned that a second. C is really just include master plan updates to the PC so you understand where we're at in the process as we move forward. And it provides, I think, a link to the community for public input throughout the process. So something for you to discuss further. Number five, add as a new action items under the current housing goal, investigate an affordable housing incentive program, include ADU and other housing types in that. Maybe we want to flesh out what the other housing types are, or maybe we don't. We just want to go, you know, do some research on what that might be to include in a policy. Consider bungalow court / small lot development zoning. We do have the ability to do these now, but it's not fleshed out. It's not a thing in our code. It would be housed under the plan development overlay right now, and it's not really a specific thing. This actually is something that might have some branding that goes along with it and something that we could promote to folks that want to build housing in the community. So think about it along those lines.
So we do, you think there is work there for the small lot bungalow court thing?
Okay. Yes. Yeah, I think there's ability to do that. And this could be, you know, rental homes and or could be have lots and they could be home ownership. So we need both of those things, and so it could be both. There are other communities in our county that are pursuing things along these lines and ordinances that are similar to this, so we have something to draw from, and we wouldn't have to start from scratch. So just putting that out in front of you. And then again, pursue funding opportunities for housing, affordable housing, development of policies and those types of things. There is going to be funding available. There is funding available now. We've used some of it to help with our policy development, and we could continue to do some of those things because there's going to be more money available along those lines, and so we could continue to pursue that. Six, and the last one is the downtown waterfront connection. I'm not sure when this item was brought up. I mean, I think I did mention it, but I'm not sure that everybody's aware that we have a downtown and waterfront strategic plan that talks about connection to the downtown and the waterfront. You also see Market Plaza on there. That's a redevelopment project on city-owned property, so that could be part of that connection. If you put a development there, it should rightfully, you know, engage up the street and provide some of that, so part of the discussion could be there. This could also be wrapped into the discussion of the downtown ad hoc committee for things that you're doing, because you're going to have to look at our existing planning documents to move forward there. You don't want to like be repeating yourself. So you want to see what we've done, build off that, not maybe take away from that. A couple of the action items I put under here would be create a forum discussion on this item, increase PC involvement in the project for the Market Plaza piece of it. Again, I think this might be rolled into that downtown ad hoc committee for the design district. Certainly seems like it could be. So that would be maybe my thought. If you have two of these, you might be able to like move to the side and kind of focus on four and maybe wrap pieces of it in the others. So organizational capacity is a big issue for me. We have a small staff. We have, of the 12, of the five goals that we have now, we have 12 action items that we're still currently working on. The list of items that I gave you just a minute ago comprises 16 additional action items. That's way too many for my department. I'll just tell you that right now. I don't have the capacity to do all that. So we do need to be strategic about how we approach these. The good thing is we will be working through and kind of ticking the box off on some of the 12 action items that we're working on now, so that does create some capacity, but please be mindful when we're looking at this to, you know, not come up with things that we can't achieve, I guess was what I would say. Recommendation, again, is consider removing goal action item 3, the community benefits fees, because I think we're going to be done with that. Consider rolling that item 6, the downtown waterfront connection, potentially into that design district, concept. And then just to finalize our recommendations to City Council, so we can get that in front of them for their meeting on the 5th.
So thank you, Scott. The way I'd like to do this, and tell me if you'd want to do it a different way, commissioners, let's ask questions of Scott now, only questions, no discussion yet. So if we can, you know, make sure we've got some focus, and then I'd like to allow the public to engage before we come back and discuss and do comments. Is that okay with everybody? Okay. Who wants to start?
I'll start. Why don't we just go this up? Scott, we, in our prior discussions, we talked about maybe a regional approach to housing and affordable housing. Did we consider that? I mean, when you were looking at that, I mean, there be some opportunity to...
So that could be added in as another housing item. We are doing that now. Okay. We do meet regionally with the other jurisdictions in our county. We meet... we're meeting quarterly right now, I think. And we are looking at many different opportunities related to housing. We've also, you know, worked collaboratively with other jurisdictions in the county to develop a stock 80 accessory dwelling unit plan. That we're getting ready to publish on the city's website now that people can have for free. So we do that, and that could be something that's added in. It's something we're already doing, so it doesn't hurt to recognize it.
Yeah, because we've heard that may be a more effective way of getting to where we want to get to with housing, by combining our efforts on a regional approach, you know, so we're going to try to pursue that. We've talked about that, but that's number one. Number two is I know there's all these new laws that have passed that may answer some of the questions that we're asking about funding, opportunities, densities, you know, all of the things that will roll out with new laws, right, that are going to make housing not necessarily something we have to do, but that we want to do just because we want to do it, but we're going to be mandated to do it. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities based upon new laws that are passing, like I think another 30 passed or something like that. You know, we got an email from the city clerk with all these new laws, right? I don't know if anybody read them all, but Jesus Christ, I mean, you know, all I'm saying is housing may be something that is dealt with, not necessarily because we want to deal with it, because we're being asked to do things by state law, as well as the fact that city council already has it on their plate as far as a big thing to do. So I, Mike, just to ask that question.
Just to add real quick, we've had some consideration of doing an information session around housing state laws and the new stuff, because it's so much.
Yeah.
And I think it would help us.
Yeah.
But again, you know, I don't want to put more weight work on Scott's plate.
Yeah. The point I was trying to make, Scott, is the fact that we could possibly eliminate housing only because it's being dealt with on a yearly basis, or is housing really something that we should forward to the council as something they should have as a goal when they already have it as a goal anyway?
Well, yeah, it's a goal. So what I would, you know, where I'm coming from on it is really, we had a few items under the housing section, and that would just be to put those as action items under the current housing goal. I think housing is likely to remain, although that's going to be up to the city council.
Yes.
I mean, but I think if the Planning Commission also feels that housing should still be at the forefront and that goal should remain, we should give them recommendations related to the action items that we move forward, because we've completed several of the current action items that are in the goals list. I have it sitting here somewhere. The current housing goals that are on there that we've completed is complete the zoning code update, develop stock accessory dwelling unit plans, provide a update on housing law legislation, implement some of the housing element action items that are in there. We're working on several of those, including update of the city's ADU ordinance, mm-hmm. update of density bonus. That's in the draft zoning code that you guys forwarded to council and the council approved. Mm-hmm. And then update the city's inclusionary housing requirements. That's done. That's sitting and pending in front of the Coastal Commission right now. Complete City Works, our project tracking system online portal, and we've done that. People can submit online. So those things are done. And then the thing that's not is the initiate work with the Planning Commission ad hoc committee for review of planning process, and that's probably something
which,
else that...
if you don't mind, that's kind of an important one.
Yeah.
That's a committee that I'm actually on it. I've been on it for 2 years, and we've never met. So it's a good idea to meet.
Yes, exactly. So
I think that's an important one to keep, as well as the compliment to council.
Yeah, sure. But those were the two main ones I had that we could move.
Got it, Eric?
Thanks.
I just have a question about housing. Has the city ever investigated the designation from HCD, California HCD, called the pro-housing designation that was mentioned in the...
It is new. We haven't looked into it.
Yeah, okay. That was my question.
I'm aware of it.
Okay. Asia.
And on that same line, looking at the chamber's recommendations, I'm wondering how we can also champion some of the things that they are championing with the city council, particularly around housing, economic development, and they have it under circulation, but a lot of it's some of the master planning. This is not a question, so let me formulate this into a question. I'm just wondering, how can we make sure we're hitting some of the same points and communicating the same goals to the city council?
Some of the items that are in the 6 points speak to things that they're interested in. I mean, one of the things that was the item that we just talked to is moving forward the planning ad hoc committee to look at planning processes to streamline those. It's housed currently under the housing goal because one of the areas it would be good to make, you know, inroads in would be to make inroads for housing in to facilitate those processes moving forward. You know, it would be a good place to start, I think, would be under the housing item to move housing projects forward, housing by right type things. We're developing policies related to that, and you'll be seeing some of the the efforts of that coming up here pretty soon, probably within the next couple of months.
Joe?
With respect to the historic preservation ordinance, my overriding concern is not to overburden the development office, but to get as much stuff done as we can. How does the development office feel if, say, the Historic Society were to take on some or most of the tasks associated with the preservation ordinance?
I mean, I think it makes sense to engage them because they exist and they're here and they developed the ordinance. I mean, you're aware, I was at some of the meetings that they had and they would kind of update me through the process. I don't know, how widespread the reach was on that as far as getting input from the community. I would think that, as we move this, if we move this forward and council were to authorize us to start talking about it, we'd have to have some kind of housing forum on it, invite folks to come and like get some input related to even the draft ordinance, the way that it sits today. Like, is this heading in the right direction? Are there other things that we want to consider? It's largely, an opt-in ordinance at this point. Are there things that we want to have be mandatory parts of it? And maybe that's part of the downtown discussion that we have. I mean, you heard the passion here today, about folks wanting to preserve the downtown, to preserve our history because it tells our story. I that speaks to me. It seems like all of you are like leaning forward and listening, so I think it speaks to you as well. So I think that's part of the conversation too, and it's not just an entirely opt-in option, but I don't know.
So it seems rather than drafting or vetting, it has more to do with public outreach and response. That's really the consuming work of your department.
Yeah, I'm not saying that the Historic Society didn't do any of this. I'm just not aware of it. Yeah. And I'm just thinking, like, when it gets to this level, we need to start engaging the community. I mean, you heard that on the panel up here today, too, engage the community. I'm all about that. I mean, I think we need to, when you're developing ordinances, you need to do that, and you need to get folks in the room that are on both sides of those issues. Like, I think some folks that we be pessimistic about historic preservation, realtors. Right? You want to bring them into the room. They're probably not going to be super happy if it's all mandatory. My take anyway, I don't know, maybe they will be happy, but I take in conversations I've had with some that they're a little skeptical about it and concerned. Like, let's bring you to the table. Talk to you.
And then, I'm not sure if this is a question, but given the limited resources associated with affordable housing and, and the little bit limited opportunities to come to Morro Bay, aside what might happen in the design district in second, third story floors and that being available as affordable housing or work-based housing, I suspect we don't get a lot of bang for the buck in terms of the research that we do and the designing. And I guess I'm asking if you agree with that. I'm trying to look at these action items to see where we could be most effective, and when I look at the housing actions, I certainly support all of them, but I'm not quite as confident that they will actually result in something tangible, as in significant amount of new housing within the boundaries of Morro Bay.
I think, if you can incentivize affordable housing, that's good. We're doing that right now. Okay, so when you reviewed the zoning code and you forwarded the inclusionary policies that were in there, that was an update, right? Well, one of the things is if you build a house over 2,500 square feet and you don't include an ADU, you have to pay in lieu fees. I'll just give you an idea because we have one of these that is going through the process right now with us. It's about 4,500 square feet, and they don't have an ADU with it. And we're like, okay, you have to pay in lieu fees. And then we did the math on it. It's at about $110,000 you have to pay in lieu fees.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you have incentive projects, to incentivize the ADU piece of it, and people are happy to pay it if they want to have the larger house. So.
Wow.
So there are things like that you can put in there to incentivize the housing component of things. Can't make people rent them out, but start to make them provide them.
Thank you, Joe. I'm going to postpone my questions. What I'm going to suggest is that I think our opportunity is to focus on probably the four things we've talked about, which is the historic preservation, the downtown design district, which comes under community planning, the master plan for the public, you know, for the power plant site, and housing. I'm going to suggest we focus on that, and then we can hear from, if there's any public comment, and then we can come back, and if we're in agreement on those things, we can focus on the action items. And I think that'll give us a real idea. And the only third thing, Scott, would be that we want to do this realistically, so that we want your best, I think, projections, that this is work that we can handle in this year. So we're picking these based on the fact that we can actually implement.
Yeah, that's good. And I do think, you know, that what the council is also going through now, because new council seated, is probably a two-year goal process, so we might be able to view it in somewhat in that light, that it doesn't necessarily have to be all done in this first year. So
I think that's reasonable. So Asia asked, the four that I think we're focusing on is historic preservation, which may include an ordinance, the downtown design district, which has already been approved by city council on the 14th, and that would come under community planning goals. The master plan, which is already in the works, but this commission is looking to be more of an active part of their master plan process for the power plant site, and then housing. And housing, I guess I would encourage us to focus on that only because that complements city council. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's real work there, whether it's grants and funding, or like the small lot ordinance is a really effective ordinance, which there's a really good chance it really fits well here in Morro Bay. Yeah. And then, you know, I think Scott has other things that he's been doing, just the incentive programs. But it's just a good fit. And so before we go to public comment, that outline, that sort of works for you right now, right?
That was kind of along the lines with the recommendation I was making, yes.
Right. Yeah. And Bill, can I just ask for clarification? So
sure.
You said, Scott, that the Planning Commission subcommittee report, you know, the public benefits item, you said we'd be dealing with that tonight, I hope, and so that doesn't have to be on there because we'll be finished with it. What does that mean?
It's the next item on your agenda. I assume I'm going to get really good direction out of the commission tonight.
Okay.
Hopefully that I'll be able to bring back the final policy and a resolution to go with it to make the recommendation to city council.
So it'll just be a separate process.
And if it goes longer than that, it's a next one other meeting beyond that. We're still done in probably two. I don't see there being more meetings to than that. Really.
I just want to clarify only because the council should see this, what we produce, you know, for the public benefits program.
Oh, yeah.
That's what the commission requested. That's why I say we're going to bring a formalized resolution that you're going to make a recommendation with to the city council, and then the city council adopt whatever that recommends.
And it didn't need to be a goal. That's what you're saying. It doesn't need to be a goal because it'll be a separate item. I want to clarify that for the subcommittee.
Because if we put it on there, we would literally, by the time it became effective,
we would be done.
We would be done.
Yeah. So. And the subcommittee has done such a very good job with the report. So. Okay. So any other questions? Can I go to public comment? Can I invite anybody who would like to speak? And I'm going to ask if you could keep it under 3 minutes. Let's put the clock on. And
now you put the clock
on. Well, I just said this for you, Terry.
I know. That's only because I provided you a 40-page outline.
And the letter was fantastic, by the way.
In fairness to Dana Swanson, you mentioned earlier that she had sent you the list of all the new state rules. That was actually an attachment to my email.
That's where I read it, actually.
And the reason that I sent that was I was researching a totally different item in a totally different community, and I happened to come across this amazing outline of all the new state laws and the authority behind those state laws that are coming our way, whether we like it or not. And I was concerned that you really need to you're the Planning Commission. You're the guys that are going to be looking at all the impacts.
Scott, make sure you turn the clock on.
Yeah, see, he didn't do it. Thank you, Scott. Got an extra minute. It's important that you be aware that all of these new state laws are coming that are going to not only modify but preempt a lot of our local authority. And so I think that's why I sent them to you. And the other interesting part of why I sent them to you is they're not from a
a governmental bureaucratic perspective. They are from the development community litigation perspective. These are the ideas that are being brought forth to the people in the development community of how to go to various communities and get what you want. So you can fully expect that you will be seeing these kinds of issues being brought forward to you and with a certain amount of heft to them, because there is now state law behind a lot of these issues. And for instance, there was some discussion earlier about the old schoolhouse, and that's a 1930s building that may or may not be seismically capable of being anything like a school, but it's certainly a beautiful monument to the history of Morro Bay. I worked on a project pro bono in Avila Beach, where the San Luis Obispo Unified School District had a charming old schoolhouse that they owned on a large site that had a big playground, and they decided for the school district's benefit that it would be beneficial that they lease that on a 100-year lease to a developer to develop condominiums on it. And the neighborhood was up in arms, particularly when they found out phase two was to tear down the old schoolhouse and build even more condos. If you take the same legislation that's embedded in all of this stuff that I sent you, you will see that there's a very strong ability of school districts now to take a site just like the downtown school and convert it into a massive housing development project with the weight of state law behind them under their own authority. They don't even need to come to you. So that could be coming your way, and I think you need to be aware of that and know that San Luis Coastal Unified School District is very, very enamored with the idea of the revenue that they can generate for their school district by doing these kind of projects. It's coming.
I'm with you on that. And for the record, Joe Asia and I did an instruction session, an all-day session in San Luis, and they had an expert, a housing expert from the state, come down and review those laws. Well, they really are impactful.
They're incredible.
So everything you're saying, I'm with you all the way.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I couldn't Thanks. Find any reference to something that the staff had prepared for the council, but I wanted you to have something
nice.
To
yeah.
begin to look at this. Because
Thanks, Terry.
It's a start.
Yeah, thank you. I printed it out and read it before really I go to bed every night. Yeah.
And for the chairs, Mike, before I even got that list, I was aware, because I have tons of connections in Sacramento that are sending me this stuff anyway. That's why I'm kind of, we're not going to deal with housing because they've told us what we're going to do with housing, right? You know, there's a lot of laws that are rolling down from Sacramento that are going to have us do things that we're probably not prepared to do, but others will be able to do, like what you just said about school districts, right? They'll be able to do it, but we need to think about them.
Yeah.
So that's all I wanted to
Thanks,
say.
Mike.
Being proactive from the city's perspective.
Other public comment? Anybody? Oh, please. Jamie.
Hi, thank you. I was hoping I might have a slide presentation up to help with my comments.
I am a slideshow.
Thanks, Scott.
From the beginning. Why is this not?
I didn't time it, but I think I can get it in 3 minutes.
Okay, you ready?
So I have a request tonight for frontage improvements, Chapter 14.44, to be one of the list of your goals for the commission this coming year, of course, with council's approval. One of the reasons behind this is it says the purpose of the requirement for this chapter is for public health, safety, welfare, and the convenience by installation of frontage improvements at the locations within the city with high pedestrian usage and where necessary for passage of stormwater runoff and drainage, kind of appropriate for this year. If you could do the next slide, Scott. The slides that I have are all in the multi-unit area because that's where it's applicable. This one's on Marina, it's on Monterey and Anchor. If you go to the next slide, This is right across the street. It's also on Monterey and Anchor across the street. The previous one was about a 70s to 80s vintage development. This one here was done in the 2000s. So interesting, the one in the 70s, 80s had full curb, gutter, and sidewalk around it. This one doesn't have any curb, gutter, and sidewalk on it. Next slide, please. This is Main Street. So you can see this is the old Maya restaurant. The hotel put the sidewalk in, which was great. And then if you go to the next slide, this is the other side of the Maya. So basically you have a parking lot on the sidewalks. Next slide, please. This is Morbay Boulevard and Piney. As you look at the corner there, you can see on the left is looking at it going towards Piney. And then the other one is walking towards Morbay Boulevard. Next slide. And this is what you encounter most of the time on this particular when you're trying to walk, so you moved out into the street. Next slide. This is our house. So this is one of the, so we were during the secondary unit which we built, we were required to put ADA and sidewalk on there, which we agreed to do when we discussed with the city that the drainage was a problem. We were told, okay, never mind, you don't have to do it. That's why you see the sandbags there that stay there pretty much year-round. We offered to do the sidewalk, but we were told the sidewalk wasn't allowed unless you did the ADA in conjunction. Next slide. And then this is another one. So you have two difference here. To the left, you have a driveway on a newer development, and behind it, you have the sidewalk in the back. And then on the right, on Main Street, you have a sidewalk with it kind of jogs out. The point is the inconsistencies and differences. And as you're talking about higher density development, you know, bungalow unit, any number of these, I would really appreciate having you take on this as a discussion, because almost every one of the items that's on your list has in some way it touched this. In fact, the board itself had an item not but a month ago, yeah, to which you all asked, what about sidewalk? Therein lies, do you actually have the tools to do what you would like to do? But I would ask that you consider that, and thanks for giving me the little nudge on that.
Thanks for raising it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie. Anyone else? Carla? Let's see. Nate, do we have anybody in the queue?
We have one raised hand in the queue, and it is Erica Crawford.
Erica, welcome.
Hi, good evening, commissioners. I'm sorry I'm calling in this evening. And I'll keep my comments super brief because we did submit a rather lengthy piece of agenda correspondence. I'm really encouraged by the discussion so far on the commission about, I'm hearing discussion in the spirit of sort of where can we be most effective and really focusing in on tangibles, you know, what are outcomes. That's one of what we're looking at is, we'd like for goals to be sort of more tangible or measurable milestones that refer to outcomes and not processes. But the word permit processing, or, you know, that's sort of a buzzword, and I am happy to hear that the commission is interested in keeping that moving forward, because I think our perspective is that you can't expect what you don't inspect. So while we applaud the transition that the staff has shepherded and that Scott Graham has shepherded with his staff to electronic plan submittal to try and get that expediting going, really talking to the users of the services that the city is providing will, I think, unearth and will kind of unearth some dialogue that will reveal some potential improvements to efficiency, which is an important thing to getting projects through, getting investment happening in our community that is in line with plans that look to revitalize and, you know, sort of measured revitalization in keeping with the character of our community. So I just kind of wanted to put a little push in for permit processing to you this evening. And I'm happy to be here. I'm tuning in for the evening. Thank you, Commissioner.
Erica, before you go, let me say thank you. Your letter was very helpful and really a strong effort. And the ad hoc planning committee comes a lot at your sort of insistence and focus. So thank you for that, and I think it will make a difference. We're going to go to the next step, but thanks for calling in.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So at this point, I'm going to close public comment. Commissioners, I would like to see if we can't wrap this up and how close we are. We do need to get this to City Council. And if we can't do it in the next 20 minutes, then what I would do is probably postpone the community benefits discussion. But I think we can get it done. And let's start first. Is there any discussion over the four categories that we're looking at? You want me to say them again? No, we're good. Asia, any
comments? I'm just wondering how we're, it feels to me like this could all go under community planning. And so,
good.
Or it doesn't have to, but just wondering how we're wanting to organize it. I think the four categories are everyone's on board with, but I'm just wondering, are we also coming up with a couple tasks under each?
Yes, so each of these four, we're going to do action items, and I think we might, there's a couple I'd like to add. But I think the start is good. I like where Scott's coming from. And whatever we add, we just want to make sure that Scott shakes his head and agrees to do it.
With respect to your comments, sir, I think that they could all go under community development, but I think they should, some of them should simultaneously go under other categories so that we cross-categorize them, rather than just in one singular. So like for economic development, I think, for instance, the master plan on the Vista site should definitely be under economic development.
So let me ask Scott if I could. The one thing I would like to do with the categories is do something that helps council. Is there any, would you suggest any categorizations that would be more appropriate to council?
I mean, I think it's, Commissioner Meyer makes a good point. I think it's a good thing that we say, hey, it could be housed under, it does both of these things. I think it's fine telling that story. I think we initially house it in one location and then let them know that this could also be housed under, economic development if you want, right, whatever the item is. I think that's fine. I don't think there's any issue with that. And I think if we didn't do that, the council's smart. They would look at it and go, well, do we want it here or do we want it under economic development? So I think that's good. The Planning Commission recognized that it could be under.
But if we could help them, why not?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
For me, it just it gives the conversation a little bit more breadth. Like, for instance, if I'm a property owner and I own a building and my tenant is a restaurant, I want to understand what his needs are, right? So I can better, if I'm going to fight for something for my property, I want to know that he needs a place for his busboy to live, and he's having trouble finding the housing for that busboy. And so that housing is not just community development; the housing is economic development, and it's important in a couple of different ways. So I just want to make sure that everybody gets to look at the full, as much of the full package as they can.
Do you have a recommendation on how you would do that?
I think just sort of including the same item under the two categories with the same bullets.
I think with an explanation. I think we just explain why we put it in those two things because it can fall under both. I think I'm if you're comfortable with that and that makes sense to you, I'm good to do it.
I don't want to duplicate it. I think that gets confusing. What do you think about Scott's suggestion? Just an explanation.
I don't really care one way or the other as long as the point is made.
Yeah, so I think as we come to those items
like
that you think
that
can fall under the other one, let me know. I'll make sure that I provide a narrative that we're recommending to City Council that includes that.
Okay, so can we go to, you've got number one, the historic preservation thing. Those are the, we have four action items, right?
Yes.
The one thing I would suggest is we definitely want to have public engagement on that. And that's one thing that I think this commission is anxious to help staff with. We've already started to do that, and I think we'll continue to do that. But I think it should be on there. Anybody have another action item?
I need some head nods. I need three of you to agree to things that we're adding to this. Cool. Thank you. I didn't think that was a problem, but I just want to make sure.
My only other thought, listening to someone speak, was about if we're going to do historic preservation and if we're going to do the downtown district, we need to talk about hazard mitigation opportunities. And there's all these state ordinances that if we're going to use all those brick buildings, they've got to be earthquake-proofed. So I don't know where that falls under, but I don't know if it's a task or if it's something.
We only have a couple of unreinforced masonry buildings in town. Most of them have all been reinforced.
Okay.
And that's almost a code issue more than.
Yeah, and we had a list, and I think we might still have a couple that aren't, but there's only two. We have a list of them.
Okay, so it's not like a big pressing. No. Okay, just wanted to double.
But that's a good point, though.
Other ideas on the historic preservation action items? Eric?
There's some word. I'm a big word guy, and if you look at 1C there, which it says investigate establishment of a local historic register, I don't really like the word investigate. I just say establish a local historic register. That's the point of the whole thing. Right? If you're, I mean, they happen. They are everywhere. We know there's no.
So there's a reason why it says investigate, and that is because you know, part of the city council's job is to manage goals with budget, and the establishment of a local historic register is going to cost money. And so I want them to understand that there's an economic component to these when they're doing the goal setting process. I can certainly remove it. I'll just make sure that I point out that there's cost to these things.
Yeah, the thing is, like, if I want to go for a walk, I don't investigate going for a walk. I just go for a walk. And if you want to investigate going for a walk, it means you really don't want to go for a walk, in my opinion. And I just, if I have two other commissioners up here that feel similar to me, I'll leave it at that. Or don't, I won't.
Well, are you saying investigate means exploring what our fiscal options are for establishing?
I think it's what does it look like for Morro Bay? I think, is there a cost associated with doing this? You see investigate several times there, and that's because to put a historic inventory, we have to pay someone to do that. We don't have that in-house experience or capacity, so there's going to be money associated with that. I think those are things that the council would want to know, like, what is the cost of doing that? I don't know what the cost of doing that for Morro Bay is, or what it might be in the context of the ordinance that we come up with. If it's, as an example, opt-in in the residential areas, but it is, you know, we have specific requirements in the downtown. I'm just giving an example. I don't know if that's where we're going, but if that's what it was, then we would look at the downtown and say, okay, like, approximately how many historic structures do we have here? What is that, you know, what does that inventory look like in putting it together?
So there isn't always a cost. Like in the city of San Luis Obispo, the History Center undertook the surveys and continues to undertake the surveys for free. And so for randomly to come up a cost based on the city asking XYZ, you know, company, yeah, there's a cost if you talk to them, but there's other ways of doing it too. So as long as your discussions to the city council provide for the range of possibilities rather than just here's what this contractor charges.
I'm not going to give them a number. I don't know. There's a lot that goes into each one of these things, and I don't know where the ordinance would go. I mean, if the ordinance goes in a direction that wants these things to be incorporated to them, then we should look into see what.
I think I'm a Scott on this one, and the other reason is that we need to do community engagement to figure out where we're going, and then a priority list will come out of that. And right now we're trying to get things that we don't want to swing and miss. So right now the investigation will set it up so that we can get to a final.
So then having said that, what we're investigating is the development of a preservation ordinance, and the subheadings aren't really even, we don't need to confuse the issue per se with the subpoints then, because the subpoints may create negatives in many ways.
Which we would want to know out of the ordinance, I think. I mean, I don't have a concern. It's, these are also things that came right out of the general plan.
If I'm all by myself here, I'll wander off.
Well, with the word investigate, I can appreciate your position, but are we really suggesting that the city council needs the word investigate to be aware that they can't vote in affirmation of something if they can't afford it? I suspect that the word investigate does sort of dilute our sense of urgency or dedication to the project.
So I'm going to take a swing at this. We've got a lot to get done tonight. Really, or do we think this wordsmithing is the thing we need? I'm asking.
Probably not.
And can I just add to what Eric just said, that I think the main thing is that we want to develop a historical preservation ordinance? And the other things really don't matter. What I'm saying is that's what we really want. The action items are all those investigate things. But let's not get caught up on that. So I agree with both of you. So
that doesn't help me. Let's keep going. Yeah. I'd say let's go through all of these. And if we still have time, if you guys want to come back, we can try on it. I don't think it's easy to change that verb.
I am going to add the E, though, public engagement. Okay.
Please.
Yes.
The next one is the downtown design district, and we're putting that under community plan. Commissioners, what do you think?
Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
I have one major comment on this one, and it's pretty major, because I think that this design process we're going through is primarily about creating more housing. It's not just design for the sake of more office buildings and higher and taller office buildings. You know, it's for creating essentially affordable and workforce level housing. It's not for creating multi-million-dollar condos. You know, nobody in Morro Bay wants to make 3-4-story buildings just to create more condos. They want it specifically for housing. And so I would suggest that this category is development of downtown affordable housing district.
So it wasn't. Sorry to interrupt.
Okay, or something along with design incorporated in
it. I think it also came online as a the height increase as a need just for economic development in any way to get more people at businesses more times of the day and night and year. And so I think it was our like priorities.
So are you saying more office development downtown, or what do you say more commercial development?
One of the ways it came as a priority, correct me if I'm wrong, was that downtown businesses said we need foot traffic in the evenings on non-tourism days and more times of year, and one way to do that would be to get more people in buildings at higher heights downtown.
We had lots of conversations as part of the general plan updates, part of the downtown and waterfront strategic plan development, and when we reached out to the business owners, and we did walks constantly, Erica Crawford was involved as well. That's what they said. That if you, we asked them, why don't you stay open later? Well, I said, well, nobody comes down here in the evening. You roll up the sidewalk when the streetlights come on type thing. So if you put more people down here, then we'd stay open later. I mean, that was part of the commentary. Mm-hmm. We need housing, too. So it's both of those things.
Can I just offer, I mean, action item A is incorporate an incentive program around housing, affordable housing. Does that not cover it, you think?
Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to preclude is the change of our downtown to higher buildings just for multi-million-dollar condos. That's what I'm trying to preclude, because that's the highest, in the eyes of a developer, that's the highest and best use. They'll get the more dollars per square foot for a condo, which is a fifth home for someone from Malibu, which we don't need any of here. We have plenty of that now. What we need is housing for the busboys and housing for the employees here and the people who live here that are having trouble finding housing. They can't afford the million-dollar house.
Yeah. Do we change the parentheses from housing in general to workforce housing, affordable housing?
I think that would be really, yeah. For me, that's an important distinction.
I like it. How's that? They all seem like, okay.
We're good.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you, Eric.
That's all. Okay, good.
Any other comments? Any other action items we would feel comfortable in this one? I think, go ahead. You first.
The thing which we're letting out of the number seven, which is the connection between the downtown and the waterfront, I just want to reiterate that we do want
that
included into this. That connect whatever, however we describe
can
it.
Can we make that an action item?
That particular spot, which is the intersection of the waterfront and the downtown, needs to be in both the waterfront plans and the downtown plan, so that they can skew and segue together.
It makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, if the commission is good, we had that plan already. So the good thing is, we have something to draw.
Yeah, you follow
from.
The
you
form
would
have, of the
you it as part of this process.
I like it here better than in a separate item.
Okay. And that also is an economic. It's not just a community development. It's an economic driver. So this is one of those ones.
Could
that crosses
we also
over.
Make like a footnote about the pedestrian sidewalks as a? It's I don't know if it needs to be in this, but how do we like capture that idea as a priority as we go through the design process?
I think that's really part of the process, but if, I mean, that's kind of adding a goal rather than an action item in a way. I don't know.
Yeah. When we get to the design, when this, and if this does become a community project based on council's discussions, at that point, then we will have had a testimony and we'll remember.
And the priorities, again, probably the one thing I would add here again is community engagement. We really feel that we start this by walking, you know, Morro Bay Boulevard. We talk to the existing businesses. We get everybody involved to kind of see, you know, what it is that we're even. It's not just what we think. It's, of course, what the community is looking for. Mm-hmm. Could we add that one as well, just community engagement piece?
Yep.
walking
well,
talks.
I would say it's a community engagement, but back to the, it's not just economic development, but it's fiscal sustainability. Are those are one point typically, or are they?
They're one of our existing goals right now, and so yes.
Yeah,
and I put that underneath here. You all seem to agree.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay.
Anything else?
No.
Mm-mm. Very good. The master plan.
Community benefits. Do we want to get to? Yeah.
We're gonna. I think right now we're saying we're gonna drop that one.
So we good? Okay. I just wanted to be get the official. Yeah.
Thank you.
Everybody. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or here's the master plan.
Do we? Is it really called the Vistra Property Master Plan?
Right now it is. So people, I mean, because it's for their property. It's for the property that's there. It includes other things on the outside of it. We're looking not just at the property.
That's why I think it's maybe a it's misnamed, because it really is a larger master plan study about the power plant site and its connectivity.
This comes from the city general plan.
Yeah, the circulation issues extend as tentacles out from this in many directions.
Which is okay, captured so through all the outreach.
Better not to change it. All right.
No.
Other input? Yeah.
You know, I recall from various forums that there was some, I won't call it confusion, ambiguity as to whether the master plan included the proposed battery site as well as the plant site and all the ancillary information. So I would think that when we refer to the Vistra plan, we're considering the entire property. Am I correct?
That's what the master plan is. So what triggered the master plan was the project.
Mm.
The general plan says, hey, if you get a development proposal for this property, Vistra wasn't an entity when we started the general plan update process. It didn't exist. It was Dynegy before that. And they were not really willing, didn't want to engage in the general plan update process, didn't want to tell a story about what they wanted to do there. They were just like arm's length. So what we put in there was the master plan process, and it's triggered by a proposed development on the site. In this instance, that proposed development's a battery project.
Mm-hmm.
So that's covering 22 acres on the site and is currently in-house, and we note that in the master plan, and it's on the maps that have been shown to the public. And then the rest of the site is the things that we're looking at, and we're looking at it a little bit of a phased master plan. This is a bit of a constraints analysis that we're doing for it, and then looking at the things outside of it, circulation like you're talking about, and other things. How do you get back and forth across the Embarcadero? Where do we make those connections? That type of thing, because those will be important. And then like sort of verifying, like, what does the community want to see out there? We put a visitor-serving commercial designation on the property. Most of the input that we receive back from the community is they don't want visitor-serving commercial things out there, not a bunch of them anyway. You know, they said, across the front, yeah, we want that. But behind that, you could have another industrial uses or a school-type use or educational use or something like that. So there's been a lot of, the comment to this point that don't mesh with the existing land use and proposed zoning that we have on it. So so I don't know where that's going to go exactly, but it's not straightforward. I'll say that.
Has there been any?
Why we want to be involved.
In light of the fact that the fire department had to go out there, the pumper, and pump out some of the area, so that we didn't have an energy shutdown the first time around in January.
That was PG&E's property. Yes.
Is a separate property?
Yes, PG&E and Vistra are separate property.
Never mind. I'll come back. Okay.
I'm going to make the suggestion that this one is complete.
Yep. I'll agree.
No additions?
No.
That's okay. Good. All right.
I would say that that we just want to make sure that it's as much public participation as we can get. Mm-hmm. If there's any way to add anything about public participation on this, is absolutely
it's the number
A.
Number one.
A.
Yeah.
Bridge the cleaning.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. Sorry.
Housing.
My earlier comment about pursuing pro-housing designation with the CAHCD. With the California Housing and Community Development. They have some excellent already in place. We just follow the plan to some degree. We should at least research what that is and as a community decide if it's something this community wants to chase.
Is that not included in those four, huh?
No, to look up what the requirements are and to have that as part of the discussion, isn't a big lift. It literally, there's a booklet on the Housing and Community Development webpage that tells you what you need to do.
Let's add it as an action item. It's not big.
It's not. Literally, we can find it, and it's part of the conversation that way.
Where is grant and funding in this?
Pursue funding opportunities for housing.
The last one.
E, that's D. We're going to add the E for Research Pro Housing Designation, but it's D. D.
So funding opportunities means grants?
We can put grants specifically in there.
I don't know if we need it.
There may be other, opportunities for funding as well. It just kind of depends. Grants is the most common thing that you run into.
Could you just write grants and/or funding opportunities?
Yes.
And are we clear on what bungalow court small lot development zoning is, commissioners? Asia?
Maybe we should put investigate in front of it.
Not really.
I mean, seriously, because that could be a million things that is worth exploring.
Scott?
What are we doing? I wasn't taking
it. There's some pretty clear already existing planning guidelines in many other jurisdictions I could point you to, and then specifically in the Pacific.
These are pretty accepted, though.
Yeah, it's pretty common. Yeah.
There are different names they call them, but I mean, the city of San Luis it has one. City of Tascadero was working on one. I think it might actually be adopted now.
Yeah, it's the small lot thing is one of the more successful strategies we've had in the last 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, when we're done, we'll call it what's right in Morro Bay, and
The 1 to 2 minute description of what this does, because currently within the existing guidelines, because of the jurisdictions and requirements under most cities' rules, when you do small lot subdivisions, you end up with a garage on the bottom, a living room on top of the garage. And on top of that, bedrooms, either one or two stories of bedrooms. And so you get this typology, which is a car court. You get a driveway with garages on both sides and then three stories stacked. And then when you put that into a neighborhood,
I'm going to interrupt only because you're making great sense, but
I'll take it from
that's
there.
A
the, next, the option then, what the bungalow court zoning provides is a typology where you create a much smaller house, a house that's a story and a half. So if there is an upstairs, it's within the roof structure, not on the second story.
And we will have a chance to get into that depth.
But the difference essentially is neighborhood compatibility.
So my other questions with this goal is how I'm just looking at the chamber's list of potential tasks and wanting to make sure we are kind of aligning with that because they are well thought through and pretty thorough. One of them is about the permit processing improvements. Is that something
that comes under the ad hoc group, right?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that's in our current goals under housing. We would keep that.
Yeah,
that's the, I don't have it on the slide, but it is in the current goals under housing. So this is the goals document that we have currently, and it's like the last item.
And Erica's point was, it's there, we love it, but we got to do it.
Yeah, make it happen.
Yeah. So we're adopting that as a thing under the...
We're going to recommend that we continue on with that, because we haven't started it yet. It's one of those items, like I did a color coding thing for you. Mm-hmm. Things that are complete were red, mm-hmm. things that were still under progress were blue, and things that hadn't been done yet were black, and this was the one thing that hadn't been done yet. And so we're reiterating that, yes, we want to do this, we want to get going on it. We said we were going to do it, we should do it.
So I guess under the create alternative housing policy that needs more definition, that might be a place to inject some of the chamber's recommendations, because that's kind of ambiguous.
What do we mean by that, Scott? I mean, I know why it's there, but what do we think we mean?
There wasn't a significant discussion on that at the meeting. I think Commissioner King brought it up. I don't think we did any sort of dive on it exactly, and quite frankly, I was a little bit rushed to put the staff report together to get it out, so I didn't have an opportunity to call her about it. Otherwise, I would have.
I think it was just-
so, I mean, there's... I think what that looks like is, are there other things that we can do to incentivize housing? And we look at the policies that we have right now. We look at the policies and implementation items that are in our housing element, and we say, hey, do we want to do any of these types of things? That's probably what it looks like. If there's specific items, which is why I said needs more definition, I thought maybe there might be other ideas among the commission that you wanted us to specifically pursue. Otherwise, we can just pull from the city's housing element.
There's been another mention of infill housing opportunities and vacant sites around town being inventoried, and potentially working with the owners of those sites to find out what are the constraints that are keeping them from being able to develop. Is that something
we have the vacant lots? Now, we have a certified housing element, so we have the vacant lots inventory. We have not done the outreach. That could be something that we could send correspondence to them, like a letter or something.
So, commissioners, what if we added? There's a lot of interest here. What if we did a subcommittee around this so that we could digest this in more detail, take the time to do some exploration? The opportunity that I see here is to customize the housing to Morro Bay. Everybody, including the state and every city, is facing these same issues, but Morro Bay has, I think, unique needs and unique opportunities. What if we add a subcommittee to this one? Asia, would you be on that?
Yeah. And maybe it could, instead of being like a task, you mean?
Oh, no, we'd make it a task.
We
would, and because it's going to be work for Scott. I'd love to join you on that.
Renaming it.
Like, yeah.
Investigate Morro Bay specific housing policy alternatives or, yeah.
I like that.
Or create Morro Bay specific.
In place of item C, then?
Or create an ad hoc committee.
Instead of C.
Yeah, correct.
Scott, what do you think?
So for C, we would say form PC subcommittee.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Or you want to say Morro Bay specific housing policy?
Yeah, that sounds like what the motivation.
Okay, I think we've got.
I'm sorry, I'm having an issue.
You're not there yet.
Computer, I'm having an issue with the computer. Just give me a second. So, form PC subcommittee to investigate.
Morro Bay.
Specific housing. Alternative housing policy.
So it's the same thing, but we're just giving it a method.
Got it. Okay.
Which I think is going to take investigation. So. I think we've got soup, commissioners. Do we have final comments? Do I have a motion? Is anybody ready?
I mean, you guys gave me direction on all of the items. Were we done with one? Sorry.
I thought we did them all. No,
we didn't come back to the number one, which was the preservation.
You said maybe we weren't done with one.
Okay, we can go back to one. Eric?
I'll back down since I don't seem to have much consensus on changing the wording. If there's nobody else really fighting with me, I don't want to waste everybody's time.
Thank you. Okay. So, do we have a motion or further discussion?
I'd move that we, how should I say this? Forward our goals to the City Council fiscal year 2023-24, including the action items, goals and action items.
Second. And so it's based on staff report as amended. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tonight.
Okay, so we take a vote for the recommendation.
Please.
Yeah.
Any discussion?
No. Only just to make sure that there's no misunderstanding on the part of the City Council and that we're not, the downtown Waterford connection is probably being in.
Well, it's in the downtown design district study.
Right, yes. And the fact that we've dispensed with the development community benefit policy is because we think we can get it. So I don't want the impression created that we've decided that those two issues are not significantly important to put in goals and items, but rather we're sort of addressing them indirectly.
Yeah, I mean, the plan for me, I don't plan on putting any comments on the public benefits piece, because they're going to be getting a separate piece of work from you, meaning the new policy and with resolution and recommendation to adopt. And then the other piece is going to be wrapped into the, you know, the ad hoc committee piece. So that'll be explained in there. And it'll be as it was always part of that, not that it was something separate and now being, you know, moved. We're just going to put it there, and that's the recommendation from the Planning Commission. They don't need to know how the sausage was made at the Planning Commission. Unless, if they have questions, they can ask me. Yeah. So
let's do a roll call, please.
Okay. Commissioner King.
Yes.
Commissioner Graffia.
Yes.
Commissioner Myers.
Yes.
Commissioner Rodriguez.
Yes.
Chair Roshan.
Happily, yes.
Motion passes 5-0. Thank you.
Commissioners, we can take a really short break. And before we start the last one, let's take 3 minutes and then we'll start. So we'll be back at 8:35.
No, what I mean is when you...
Commissioner, so we'd like to resume.
Okay.
One or two.
Yeah.
Scott, would you like to start with the staff report, or I was going to make the suggestion we could invite up the committee, the subcommittee, and let them do their report first? What do you prefer?
I have six slides that I can go through in just a couple minutes if you want. If you'd rather have them give that, that's fine. I could do it afterwards. Or
you tell me where it's going to be more helpful, before or after.
Scott. Let Scott do his first.
Scott, Sharon's
pointing that way, and I'm pointing.
Okay, you got it. Thank you, Scott.
All right, and it reflects things that are in the staff report. It's nothing that's not.
Thank you.
We don't have the thing up here.
AGP, I can't get this to come up on the monitors out here. I think it's going to, is it going to work now? There, it's going to work now. There we go. Thank you. Okay. Sorry. All it took for me to get you out of the back there, I think. Thanks. Okay, public benefits discussion. So the public benefits subcommittee was formed back in 2021. Concept behind that was to develop a list of public benefits that applicants could use related to development on the waterfront in our planned development zones. Idea wasn't that it would be prescriptive, but it would be kind of a menu, I think. Then the public benefits requirements, when we talk about the PD overlay, those were derived from the 1995 zoning code, and we have a new zoning code now, and the PD overlay is entirely different and a much more complicated process, and it's an actual ordinance if you do it. So I don't know exactly how relevant this is to it, but definitely worthy of discussion for the Planning Commission to talk about, I think. Because it does require, again, by ordinance, it goes to Planning Commission, recommendation to City Council, City Council approval, then has to go to Coastal Commission for certification and incorporation into our zoning map. Public benefits program, it includes the public benefits list, so that's what the public benefits subcommittee has come up with. They've kind of formalized a review process that breaks projects into three categories, small, medium, and large. The small public benefits project, that discussion happens at staff level. When you go to medium projects and large projects, those are more involved and would include a 30-day notice to the public to receive comment. For the medium, large is the 30-day comment period for the public to provide comment, and then we would have some other separate public forum that we would get input from the public on the public benefits discussion, and that is in relationship to public benefits being requested typically as a requirement to, like on the waterfront, you want to go from one story to two story, so it's an exception, and then you have to provide extra public benefits so that you can do that, and it needs to offset the impact from the exception being requested. That's kind of the concept. So I do have some concerns about those types of things, and hopefully we can have some discussion about that at the end of this, after the presentation from the subcommittee. But you have the medium and large projects that require additional process that lengthens the city's project review times, can potentially create a disincentive for investment in our community if you're creating longer processes. We want to be careful about that when we're doing those types of things, especially considering we have a goal, right, that's to streamline our permitting process to make it better, faster, smoother. And then these additional processes also serve to create additional work for staff. We have to do noticing. We have to now have an extra meeting. My staff is, they're small, but they're mighty, but they can't do everything. And so that's one other concern I have is we're about at max capacity right now. So if you add a bunch of additional work for us to do, then it becomes problematic for us to do it in a timely manner. Again, so lengthening the process. And then, like I mentioned, it potentially does the opposite of what our current goal under the housing item is to streamline our processes. And so we'd like you, as you listen to the presentation and hear what the subcommittee's come up with, to keep those things in your mind so we can have a good conversation about those components. So I think we could certainly come out of here with something that's really good. So hopefully that's the case. I think that is. The last item, I would say that we do, one of the things that captures this process is our conceptual review process. Significant projects that come before the Planning Commission almost always have a conceptual review. Applicant comes together, puts a concept plan together, looks at this as application, sees maybe exceptions that he needs, and then incorporates public benefits into it. And then we have the discussion at the Planning Commission before there's any permits on the line, right? It comes in here, we have the conversation. Planning Commission, what do you think about the benefits, public benefits being offered versus, you know, the exceptions being requested? We take that input, and then the applicants go back, revise their projects, incorporate the input, and then and that also includes a public comment opportunities and those types of things. So we do some of this already. I don't know, I think if we did go down the road where we have these more lengthy processes, it might actually disincentivize the conceptual review process, because I could see people wanting, applicants not wanting to do it, wanting to, like, oh, I have this other thing I have to do that's going to take longer. I don't want to add two of those in. So I would like the commission to give some consideration to what that looks like and what the real processes that we follow look like in the, in planning. So I will leave it at that and turn it over to the subcommittee to provide their presentation.
Before Sean begins, let's ask Scott some questions. And I do want to ask you, concept review, is that voluntary?
Concept review is voluntary, but how it comes about is we're working with the applicant. We see issues with the project, either in compliance with various policies, or they're asking for some exception, or there's design problems with it. And I often, as opposed to having this confrontational type thing where I write a staff report and say, here's where the project's not compliant with it, Planning Commission figure it out, I suggest them that they do the concept review so we can get input from the Planning Commission on this, and so we can have a positive process moving forward.
Yeah, and I like all that, but it is voluntary. So someone could say no. An applicant could say no.
They could.
So which is more work, if we make it non-voluntary there or if we make it a separate step later? Which is more work for you all, you know what I mean? Because
I would say this. Applicants, you know, we usually listen to what I have to say. I created this concept review process. The city didn't used to have it. I actually created it when I was in Pismo Beach, and we used it, and it was very successful. Planning Commission there liked it. When I brought it here, the Planning Commission here liked it, because it removes some of that adversarial type thing you get when the permits are on the line and they're standing in front of the dais. And so normally I don't think I've had anybody tell me no since I've been here.
I'm with you on that, except for the fact that now we're kind of looking at it as a tiered approach with community benefits, which we're trying to elevate. And I'm not, like, worried about that they're going to say no. I just kind of am wondering, don't we need a certainty? So maybe it's too hard to make it mandatory. What's involved with that?
We have to write it into the ordinance that you have to do concept reviews, and then what is the trigger? Just when you're asking for exceptions? Because there might be other. We use concept reviews even when projects are compliant.
Well, the applicant should know that if he's asking for special things, he's going to have it at one end or at the other. And does he want it as a preliminary discussion where it's not on the line yet and he hasn't spent his money? Or does he want it later when he suddenly has to change everything?
What I'm saying is the concept review process is well received by the applicants. Yeah. They like having that interaction.
Yeah, we get that. Yeah, and we agree. I guess I'm just sort of doing, like, full circle, and that because when Sean presents, we'll see that they're looking at certainty around the public engagement process, which I think is good.
Mm-hmm. I guess what happens is that we're going to discussion. I'll wait.
Yeah, me too. Any other questions for Scott? Mm-hmm. Sean. Thank you so much for waiting.
Waiting 2 years for this.
I hope everybody has had a chance to read this report. It's a serious piece of work.
I'll try to bring some energy. We're two and a half hours or more into this Planning Commission meeting. But I'd like to thank the subcommittee, Mike Rodriguez and Joan Graffia. I'd like to thank staff for your ongoing help with this. And I think your questions set up this discussion really well. We're looking as a subcommittee. We've done so much work on this.
Sorry, 10 minutes. Could you do that? Yeah. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
That's right. We've done so much work on this, so much thinking about this, and we're really looking for a scenario that benefits the Planning Commission, that benefits staff, that benefits development applicants themselves, and that benefits the public in the public engagement process, which is a theme that has occurred with every public speaker and every one of your comments already today. So I'm really encouraged by that. You have a basic history of how this process came about, so I don't need to get too deep into that process. Yes, plan development is changing more or less, but conceptually we're talking about this idea of public benefits, especially with respect to people seeking modifications to city standards, most likely along the waterfront or the Atascadero 41 corridor or the battery plant facility. Those are where some of the plan development areas are remaining. We as a subcommittee took a look at those three districts, and if you're following along on our subcommittee report, we're looking at around page three or four right now. We chose some case studies in specific areas of town, and based on the relative size of the project, we understand that Morro Bay is not a huge place, and so what we might call small, medium, and large is relative to what it's fairly abstract but useful for our discussion. Our first case study, 833 Embarcadero, also known as the Off the Hook property, was a property that along the waterfront sought to build above 17 feet, which required a finding of significant greater than normal public benefits. We considered that a successful project, a successful balanced project. That project offered improvements to the Harbor Walk connectivity, significantly expanded Harbor Walk width, additional 5-foot vertical access way, cultural and historical signage, children's playground equipment, public seating and public restrooms, all on that private development along the waterfront. Part of this project's success, I personally would attribute to that particular applicant being well aware of our city and very invested in our city and to some degree altruistic and proactively providing these public benefits in a way that we can hopefully facilitate from all applicants moving forward in a way that not only benefits the public but benefits the private applicant themselves. Case study B was at the Morro Bay Power Plant facility. Certainly this project is in flux, in progress, and the elephant in the room in almost everything we talk about here at the Planning Commission level. Some things that we want to point out regarding the Morro Bay Power Plant facility with respect to our public benefits discussion. The applicant submitted a project a couple years ago at this point, and two more recent successes with respect to that project dealt with public engagement, and that began last fall, in fall of 2022, when two public forums were held with respect to Vistra and what potentially could be incorporated into that property and the master plan, and that was those were. Had mixed reviews from the community, but that was followed up with a public survey that was spread very widely, and I look forward to seeing the results from that public survey. And so what we can learn from that is that the public does want to be involved, they want to be informed, they want to have opportunities to engage in a project on the front end rather than reactively at a Planning Commission hearing or City Council hearing when in many ways it might be too late to participate in that process. A third case study that we have, Atascadero Road, 295 Atascadero Road, which is the hotel that's nearing completion there at the 41 corridor. That was a project that built to 37 feet, applied to build to 37 feet in a zone that maxed out at 30 feet. And so that was a significant modification to city standards that they were seeking. Certainly building height is one of our potentially most contentious items in town with our ocean views. And as part of that process, there was sort of a back and forth, sort of a negotiation first at the staff level, then at the Planning Commission level, where these negotiations were kind of happening in real time on the spot, like at a public hearing, that made for a kind of a difficult process. But in the end, that project did offer improvements to public to pedestrian safety, some bicycle parking, and public EV charging stations, which I look forward to opening up here to the public soon. So, with those in mind, and after reading some public benefits conversations in other jurisdictions, what we tried to do is start formulating some potential pathways or plans whereby staff could engage with private developers, where the where the private developers could engage with the public, and all that could happen ideally before something reaches the Planning Commission, and that's sort of what leads to our next discussion. Going off of page 10 on the on our subcommittee report, some things that, some key factors for the Planning Commission to consider or explicitly address today might be the triggering mechanism for public benefits review, project size, scope, or other determining factors, the size, scope, or nature of requested modifications, the size, scope, or nature of satisfactory public benefits responses to those requested modifications, public input opportunities specific to public benefits, and public outreach opportunities to specific to public benefits that might be possible in the future. All right. So, triggering conditions for public benefits review. We categorized a number of small, medium, and large projects that have either happened recently or are in progress or are likely to happen in the immediate future. And you can see that collection on page 11. And when we started looking at the attributes of those particular properties, we kept coming back to building size in terms of square footage as sort of the easiest determining factor or triggering mechanism for the different categories if you are open to having different categories for public benefits review. Others we considered lot size, project valuation, things that are a little bit more abstract or hard to gauge or weren't indicative of the potential burden of that that project. So then we talked about the size, scope, and nature of modifications, and those are. Those could be of any shape or size, but generally speaking, if someone is requesting a 1 inch above maximum height, certainly that's less burdensome to the public than a 10-foot requested modification. And more or less, we're seeking, as a subcommittee, we're generally seeking public benefits commensurate with the public burden that is asked for. That's philosophically what we're looking for. When we're talking about how to mitigate those burdens and how to review public benefits, one thing our subcommittee wants to stress is that we have no intention of delaying the process. In fact, we hope to streamline the process in part by clarifying and simplifying what that public benefits process is, and in part by offering a kind of public benefits menu, which is how this whole process started, where developers who have no idea what we want as a city, here's a list of things that we generally like in our city. And in fact, anecdotally, in speaking with two Vistra representatives at one of the public meetings in the fall, Vistra's main concern at that time to me anecdotally was, your city needs to tell us what you want so that we can include that in our proposal. Okay. We looked at a couple different approaches as to what review could look like in terms of public benefits. The leading candidate was a separation of small, medium, and large projects. The small ones more or less retaining our same review process because they are more manageable at the Planning Commission level, perhaps in one meeting. Medium projects, we added a 30-day window for public input, whether that happens by email or how that is facilitated. That was our thinking there, to add an additional level of public engagement opportunities. And then for our large projects, that would be a 30-day window for public input, as well as a public outreach forum that could potentially be facilitated by the applicant themselves rather than city staff. In terms of categories of public benefits, I don't think I need to spend too much time on that, but on page 19, we ultimately ended up with about eight categories that are, beautification and signage, history and culture, pedestrian and bike, that kind of thing. Is it a perfect categorization? I don't know, but I think it's functional for our purposes, and we can add items to those lists accordingly. We did, as a public benefits subcommittee, discuss the notion of tax revenues as greater than normal public benefit, and whether like cash payments or tax revenue should be considered. Tax revenue generated as part of a normal course of business, as has been stated by past planning commissioners, wouldn't necessarily be considered a greater than normal public benefit in our eyes as a subcommittee. And then the last thing I think I'll mention is the fact that these ideas of proportionality and nexus were discussed at length within the subcommittee and at the Planning Commission level as well. We had seven meetings. We came up with a number of different scenarios. We sort of settled on the document that you have in front of you. Takeaways here on page 23 to consider as my time is running out. Plan development, we're looking for plan development zones and other applications of public benefits, if that's something you want to discuss. A pathway or pipeline approach to public participation. Whether or not building square footage is an appropriate determining factor for public benefits review. The appropriateness of the public benefits menu and whether or not financial contributions want to be considered as a public benefits. I'll add a sixth one. Concept review seems to be sort of an elephant in the room that may or may not be merged with our efforts here as a public benefits subcommittee. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Sean. You want to stay up there just for a second? Joe, do you want to say a couple of things, and then we can open it to questions, maybe specifically for Sean?
Sure. I personally want to thank Sean for the incredible amount of work that he contributed himself into this detailed report. And I want to reiterate that I and the subcommittee certainly do not want to delay the process of approval of any properties. And we have a sense that this might actually expedite it. And I can think of this as kind of an experiment to see if, in fact, that hypothesis is true.
Not an investigation, an experiment.
The idea of a concept meeting, I really like and support, because it strikes me that the public to be involved and to provide input doesn't need a particularly full-fledged or detailed plan, where the nature of the foundation or the roof structure and all the things associated with the building, but you know, the basic things that could easily be presented in a concept early on or very, very early on. And you know, after thinking about it, I mean, I think the Planning Commission might actually be well suited as that kind of public forum where they could come to express their ideas about this early concept. And then finally, I'd like this business. I think we strongly support the notion of additional public input, just on the principle, but also for the very practical reason that we're pretty sure that that's the expectation of most of the people in Morro Bay, that when these medium-sized projects and certainly when these large history-altering projects for Morro Bay come before us, that they are consulted and consulted in detail. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I'd say it's really important to buy into this notion that the additional community benefits really have to be commensurate with the size of the project, however you define that, and the scope of the exception or exceptions that are being asked. For these large projects, we're not talking about, you know, a few more park benches where people can sit and a few more bike racks. That's it.
Mike, you want to add anything?
No, I just want to thank Sean and Joe for working together for 2 years, and Joe represented the commission in his comments, so Sean did the presentation, so I just said I'd lay back and
thank you.
They covered everything. Thank you.
And the commission wants to thank Mike Rodriguez, Joe Ingrafia, and Sean Green. Commissioners, any further questions for Sean while he's still standing up there? Don't leave.
Right there.
Thanks, Sean.
Right, thanks.
Public comment. If we can do that, do we have anybody who would like to comment? Can we put 3 minutes on the clock, please? Terry, welcome.
I provided the commission with a short public comment. I provided the commission a short public comment in my printed remarks that I sent forward. I have semantic problems with the idea of a public benefit when we're already burdened, and I say we, the development community, I have my developer hat on right now, we're already burdened with the mitigation aspects that come out of CEQA. This is very similar to that in my mind. I also was involved many, many years ago in the adoption of art in public places, which is a similar kind of public benefit, if you will. Ultimately, that boiled down to just a percentage of construction costs. Straightforward. Nothing subjective about it. You build a $1 million building, you're going to spend 2% of that on adorning that building or its surrounds with public art. Big deal. Let the developer come, let him show him a budget. And it's something that it's not subjective. It's objective on the front end. A developer can look at a community and decide whether they want to do a project in that community, knowing that they're going to have to spend an additional 2% to adorn the community with public art. If you have a laundry list of public benefits that you think that aren't covered by CEQA, that aren't mitigations of obvious public needs like fire hydrants or schools or whatever, then just make it a percentage of the cost of the project. And then let the developer come to you and tell you what his proposal is for how he's going to provide that additional public benefit based on the guidelines that your public benefits ordinance has of what you perceive to be public benefits. But make it a real number. Make it somebody that on the front end, when they're looking at building, let's say a $500 million electric storage facility, if they knew that they were going to have to spend 2% of the cost of that $500 million, on providing a real public benefit, they might be able to facilitate a complete boatyard haul-out facility, which is something this community has been promising the boating community for over 30 years that I've been working on it. So put a number on it. Make it easy for the development community to come to the city knowing full well in advance what they're going to be talking about. That's my thought. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Provocative. Joe.
I would like to address that comment.
Sure.
I want to make it explicitly clear that mitigation of problems caused by our proposal are in no way what we're talking about in terms of additional community benefits, which are an explanation to the community and to this board why we should grant an exception to what is the rule in terms of a development. It is not a mitigation of problems associated with the project.
I do agree. Eric?
The trouble with that, in my opinion, is that if you're asking for the 1 inch further height for your building, if you're asking for the 10 feet for your building, that is something else. And if you just have a flat percentage, I don't think that's fair at all it's too generous to the guy who wants 10 feet and too onerous to the guy who wants 1 inch. And so it's tricky to just give a flat fee. So I can see why you need to be a little bit more like this.
Yeah. Other public comment? Nate, do we have anybody in the queue?
There are no raised hands in the queue at this time.
Then at that point, commissioners, how do we want to go about this? Joe, Mike, do we have suggestions?
Well, I was going to make a motion that we approve the memo as written and forward it to council.
I think we should discuss prior.
Yeah, but
I have some suggestions.
Yeah, that's fine. But make a motion, stop. Right? Can we say make the motion?
Yeah, let's start with your suggestion.
I mean, I should have not interrupted. If one of the planning commissioners is going to make a motion, they can make a motion.
You certainly can. So you want to make a motion, I would ask you to listen through. But
sure.
Yeah. Okay. Scott, what are your suggestions?
So listening to, the presentation, I've read it several times, and I've met with the subcommittee multiple times. I do think there is sort of a middle ground here, and I think it's probably a good one, but I'll see what you say. Mm-hmm. I think, the conceptual review process is one that most of the folks that do development in town are familiar with, and then... Chair Roshan, you rightfully asked, well, it's not mandatory. And my response to you was, no, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you wanted the certainty of us making sure that we get that extra public input. And I think that we could simply create the policy where if they're not going to do the conceptual review, they do this process that's in front of you. I don't have that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm good with the breakouts that they have. I'm good with that process. And if somebody wants to elect to go through that, then they can. If we move this forward.
What's the vehicle? This is not an ordinance that we're proposing, right?
It would be a policy by resolution.
Mm-hmm.
I will refer from
the Planning Commission.
From the Planning Commission.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll be a policy resolution. I will bring it back for your sort of like acknowledgement. This is what it is. Mm-hmm. I will probably work with the subcommittee on making sure that I get it right. There's a lot in that write-up, and really what I'm looking at is the kind of the categories, the upfront things that Commissioner Ingroffi was speaking about the level of public benefit matching the exceptions being requested. I think there needs to be a little bit of narrative on the front top of it that speaks to that. I think that's right size to me. And so I will probably work with them to kind of finalize that, put the resolution together, and then bring it back here for the final. Yes, Scott forwarded to City Council.
I think I saw nods.
Yeah, yeah. I'm okay.
Joe?
So there would be a mechanism whereby significant members of the public would be able to access the conceptual design and then get to a meeting somewhere and talk about it.
It would be the Planning Commission.
The Planning Commission. The conceptual reviews are held here.
So theoretically, there would be a concept meeting here at the Planning Commission, and at the subsequent meeting, after we digested the public's comments, we would, you know.
It would all transpire at one meeting, like the conceptual reviews normally do. We would be talking about the project design, the exceptions being requested, the proposed public benefits. Public can weigh in on all of those things. This is a process that we already have and we use, and it's pretty successful, I think. And if someone said, hey, I don't want to do that, and we still want to have the public inclusion portion of that, we do what is in the document there. We formalize it for those medium and large projects. We do the public outreach piece and the forum piece, if it's the large one, and the public outreach piece, and let people know that it's available. So,
if I could offer, I really like that too, because public benefit is not easy to manage.
Mm-hmm.
From the bridge between public to developer through staff. Our ability to manage that, we're sort of in a unique position to do that because somebody has to begin to weigh the scope and the nexus and then figure out the capacity. So as simple as the, you know, Terry's, you know, Art in Public Places, which was a great CRA program, almost impossible to do here in a way that would be, I think, right in a fit and not challenged.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we can manage that negotiation here somewhat and focus it, I think, is a really good thing.
Yeah. I mean,
The process just needs to be very carefully defined out let's say you're the new guy in town. This is confusing to some degree, in my opinion, and it needs to somehow and somewhere, and how that happens within community development guidelines process is excruciatingly complicated typically. I guess I'm just a little afraid of how this plays out when if you do this, you don't have to do that, but if you do this, it's only because you know what's on page 13. You know, how do we make sure that when you come back to us, I just want to make sure that there's the mechanism by which the public is informed about this through the...
Yeah, fair point, and I think that's the art in it. I will say that, and we do that now. Most people, like, when these things come up and we're having these conversations early on, most smart developers come and talk to us early. They don't just show up with a big package of plans and like, here, what we want to do. The ones that, you know, they come in, they talk to us, they tell us up front, like, hey, we can't meet this development standard. We like want the extra height on the waterfront as an example. I'm like, okay, well, you need to do the extra public benefit. We point them to this process. We suggest the conceptual review thing. So that gets conveyed to them personally by staff. All of the planners are familiar with the conceptual review process. We implement this. All of the planners will be familiar with this process. If you choose not to do this, okay, the requirement is to do this. We will have that explanation on our website. It'll be a document by itself, you know, assuming council is willing to implement it. So
let's say that we kind of like where this is going, but I think equally critical is the trigger. What projects would you be asked to do conceptual review? And so we've got this medium and large thing. That's almost for sure that they all do, or not necessarily, in your mind. What's the trigger?
Well, the trigger at the moment is the for the thing that's in front of you is they're asking for exceptions.
Okay, that's one. What other triggers would there be? Like historic issues, for example?
It could certainly be that, yes. I think that's a valid one. And that would come about a little as they're putting those, like as they talk to us up front, we say, hey, your building's older than 50 years, you need to do a historic evaluation. We get these things back, and they say it's historic by through the state process, federal process, or it's just historic locally, which I think is going to be important to us because a lot of our buildings probably aren't going to meet those thresholds. So being important to Morro Bay, you know, kind of again dovetails into the other item that we, you know, looked at.
If we want to go there, do we have to write that into the this?
I have to give some thought like how we do that because we don't have the policy in place now. We don't have like the historic ordinance in place.
And Bill, can I just clarify?
Yeah, please, Mike.
And here's where the master plan came into play. We're not talking about 22 acres. We're talking about a lot of stuff in Morro Bay, you know, a lot of acreage, not just the 22. So that's where that master plan came out of our head saying, wait a minute, you know, it's not just about one piece of it. It's about the whole thing. And how does the community benefit from that? How does the Morro Bay, what are the needs of Morro Bay as far as public benefits? So how do they benefit, the city benefit that way, as well as the community? So, you know what I mean? There's a lot of thought that had to go into that. So, you know, that was part of it. So, in other words, the land use may not be consistent with what the community wants to see or what the planning commission could put forward, you know, if it were to study the proposal. In other words, you know, there has to be some thinking out of the whole thing.
I don't think this is the process. I mean, Commissioner Rodriguez, it's a fair point, and I'm going to expand on that a bit. I think this isn't going to work for everything because we have other documents that tell us what we're supposed to do in those instances, like at the power plant process. We're supposed to go through a master planning process. That's different than this.
So let's simplify it down for a second. Right now, the triggers would be for you, and they're implied in this report, any exception that is, what's the word, It has to be more than insubstantial. It has to be, is substantial the right word?
The 1-inch thing is that there's not much public benefit. I don't think we'd be asking for
it. So,
for that.
I mean, sometimes it's percentage. If it's over 5%, then it qualifies as substantial.
Yeah.
Something like that. The second one that we've talked about would be how old is the building? Is there any potential historic
impact to historic?
That would be a... That would be a trigger for concept review. And, commissioners, anything else about triggers?
I mean, we hadn't really considered the notion of historic significance as triggering even entitling us to the.
I think
additional community benefits. I mean, is that? I mean,
you may just need to leave a blank within the document saying that there's going to be something in this blank.
So this is why we haven't done this before. So I don't know how it's actually. I mean, like we're laying out and talking about how it's going to work. How it works in reality may be entirely different. It may work really well, or maybe really messy because we haven't done it yet. You know, the concept review process that I went through, like developing it and putting it in play, like that took a little while to get it like right sized and the fit and when we use it. So it is very much like an iterative kind of process. You know, until you get to where you're happy with it, but it's never set in stone, right? I mean, even in ordinances, you can make changes to it. This is going to be a policy resolution, we can make changes to it if we don't like where it goes.
And Joe said this is an experiment, so let's stay with that for a bit. Yeah. I mean, this is the first time we've had it, and it's not like cities do this all the time. This is a rarity among, you know,
you know, planning departments.
I mean, I would caution not to try and not go too far beyond what the report has really addressed. I mean, because that's the extent of our thinking at this point. You know, we could certainly come back and say we want to apply the same approach to these other situations. But I would try to resolve.
And you know what, Joe? That triggers me a little because I was in Pajaro to go see the damage that happened in that community. That was in a 100-year flood. That was a bigger deal, okay? This is like a 100-year project. In some cases, you're going to have a 100-year project, okay? That's kind of what I saw out there, something that hadn't happened before, ever, in that community. I was out there this past weekend with friends looking at that levee system. What I'm saying is we're going to be putting forward something we'll never put forward again. That's what I was trying to talk about, scale. But we hadn't talked about it. What we talked about is in the memo. Mm-hmm. That's why I like what Joe said. And I was focused on the memo. That's why I was ready to move it to council that way. Mm-hmm. But I knew that would start the discussion. That's why I made the motion. So I'll pull the motion at this point. I'll pull my motion and say I like Scott's recommendation.
Okay.
So we'll wait for you to come back and give us, you know, what you think will work. And then we'll give it back.
I will work with the subcommittee. Scott said it. You can find it.
Yeah, my plan is to work with the subcommittee to kind of create it, to make sure that I'm not like, I see it one way and you're seeing it someplace. So I don't want to put something in front of you that you don't agree with or isn't the tenant and the basis for that document.
Yeah.
Can we discuss different subjects slightly?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Terry brought up the point about making it clear to a developer approximately how much money that person could be spending to meet this obligation. It's an unknown when he walks into the room. Was there a discussion amongst you guys as a group about monetary, specifically, you know, percentage versus this list? And how did that discussion go?
We from time to time broached the subject, but I don't believe we did anything that was really substantive about it. But I'll let
Sean, do you want to weigh in?
We did talk about that. We certainly see the value and the intent behind that. It did seem to us that it could be a little bit abstract, a little bit I'm an English teacher. Manipulatable, is that a word? but like for example, I'm on the Harbor Advisory Board, and a number of leases have required lease improvements. And it's a valuation that it's a moving number type deal, and it's really hard to pin down. It's also hard to quantify the significance of a requested modification. So we're trying to make concrete what is already abstract is sort of our thinking.
Yeah, and as a last comment from the committee, because Joe said it, he said one of the things we've never done as part of the planning process is gotten into the financials. That's usually the council's job as far as, you know, reviewing that big stuff. So we didn't really look at it that way. We considered it, but we said that would probably move up to the next level, right? I mean, usually does. The financial part of it usually is made by the council anyways. We didn't try to spend our time there.
And like you said, that's not traditionally, that's like right. Sean, so that's not traditionally how we've done it. Yeah. I think, you know, what the subcommittee did look at is the things that we've done on other projects. That was a, that was a good, you know, study there, I think, on their part, because I think the idea is if you're asking for this height exception or a couple of exceptions, I'm going to use the waterfront because that's where it's going to come up the most. It's not going to come up as much elsewhere. We see these more recent projects that have come through. There are multiple aspects of public benefits. There's a public bathroom. There's a public viewing area. There's a plaza. There's a widened harbor walk. It's not just the minimum 10 feet. It's now 14 feet or 15 feet or whatever. So you're getting multiple things for that. It's a plaza that somebody's putting in, like I said. So it's those things when you're asking for that type of, you know, exception. Those are our experiences now. So,
commissioners, I'm going to offer with Scott's suggestion about the conceptual design and the alternative, with Joe's point that the report is good, why don't we go with it? I'm saying I'm prepared for a motion if anybody is ready to go there.
I move that this report be turned over to the development office to refine into some way that we can look at and say, yes, I think. I mean, I
Based on the discussion we just had.
Yeah. And I'd second that.
Do you have that? Is that clear, Scott?
Yeah, so I think there's...
Why don't you repeat it for us?
I think there's agreement about the process that we're going to go through. We're going to take the report. We're going to take the process that I came up with. Like, so the trigger is going... You're going to start with the concept review, and if someone chooses not to do that, then we will implement the tenant in the basis of the report that was provided. It's not going to be... I'm going to distill it down to make it a couple of pages long, sort of like, you know, I did in the staff report. I kind of took the... what I thought to be the major components of it and put it in the staff. It was going to be something along those lines, so it'll be a couple of pages long. Then I'm going to bring it back with a resolution that the Planning Commission would adopt for recommendation to City Council, and then I would move it to City Council with a City Council resolution that would adopt it to allow us to implement it.
Okay. I've got a any further discussion? You want to take a roll call?
Yes. Commissioner King.
Yes.
Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Rodriguez?
Yes.
Commissioner Ingraffia?
Yes.
Chair Roshan?
With a big thank you to the subcommittee, yes.
All right, motion passes 5-0, and thanks for all the work on this. This was good.
Thank you, guys. Sean, awesome. Awesome work. We're almost at 9:30. We're very close. Planning Commissioner comments, agenda items, any? Eric, come on. No? Okay. Okay, none. Scott, you going to give us a further report?
The only item I want to reiterate is what the mayor brought up earlier, and that's that the council goal setting, first meeting on goal setting, is on April 5th at 5:30 in this room. So.
Thank you very much.
That's a Wednesday, by the way.
And if I could... like the people who hang to the end always get a big thank you and a special thank you for Carla. Really nice to see you here. And I think if everybody's comfortable, the meeting is adjourned.